Good afternoon. The time is now 4:02. I'd like to call to order this regularly scheduled meeting of the Thompson Springs Special Service Fire District. Today is July 14th, 2019. Those in attendance are Greg Halliday, Terry Moore, Lori Packman, Evan Clapper, Health Administrator Ruth Dillon, and the other team on this board, Chris Barrett.
All right, I've got the chief's report. That's the first item on the agenda. Mark, you want to come on and talk through it?
Hello.
So I'll just briefly talk about some of the recent incidents. On the 27th of June, there was a brush fire right by the Thompson Road shed. Power line arc or something, stuff sparked down. Luckily, it was early in the morning, so the wind was coming out of the east. Otherwise, it wouldn't be coming out of the southwest, but it's gone straight towards home. We caught that pretty quickly. The morning, 2:30 in the morning on the 30th, two young kids were seriously injured in an ATV accident at the Thompson Exxon, which is kind of a long story, but they weren't from Thompson. So, if you have questions about that, I'll talk. That same day, at approximately 4 and 6 p.m., the power went out in Thompson, and I looked out the window, nothing. I looked out the other window, and there's 10-foot flames breaking past my house. So someone hit a power pole and knocked it over and went into the grass and went ripping. Luckily, it was Sunday afternoon. There were a lot of people home. One guy was on his grader, the other guy was on his backhoe. So by the time I got to the fire station, got the truck back, it put line up around my house, thank you, and it almost got into the neighbor's before it got to the neighbor's house. So it was really bad because it's really old wooden structure. So we got two bullets on nervous effect because it's just a tail of gasoline out there right now. It's a deep draft, so it's dry, and now it's just wind. So it's not good. So, Moab Fire Department came out with that, and the state came out the one, and BLM came out and helped me with that, so kind of mop them up and stuff. But Moab Valley Fire Department's been great in helping me out. And then on the 10th of July, if anyone's been north of Highway 191, just before I-70, there's a 12-acre burned car where, for some reason, a fire started in the grass, and it hit it. I got there first, being alone, so much I could do. Started fighting it, and the Moab showed up, and eventually the state showed up. But we kept that at 12 acres. It could have gone much, much more. So we got a quick jump on it. As far as equipment goes, the big engine, took the Green River. I got a safety inspection and a wash, even though inspections aren't required by law. With our state agreement, to get 30% fire, we have to have an inspection, and to get things due anyway, just to make sure it's safe out there. Training, we did some hydrant practice. As far as the board, getting the board together, I did give an application to one other person. Hopefully he'll fill it out to 102. This weekend, this Saturday, is the second annual Thompson party. It's being hosted in someone's backyard. Last year we had a couple people entertaining music-wise, and a good opportunity. It's a really nice kind of a potluck. But I will take that opportunity to try to find another board member. So. And I need three, right?
Yeah. Are you performing?
I'm not. I'm retired. But yeah, you're all invited. It's pretty cool. And that's about all I have.
Do you have any more volunteers?
The old chief has been helping me out.
Okay.
So
are you again?
Yeah, but like I said, when that fire took off behind my house, people, you know, it's dangerous. I don't encourage it, but people got on the heavy equipment and did what they needed to do. So I'm very grateful for that. But okay. Still working on your mind. Thank you, guys.
Jumped out of order there.
Also, my office is doing advertising for that Thompson Fire Board member event. And I did talk to the one board members today to apply, to let them know that the spirit of interest here is the former fire chief, the Thompson Fire.
Any citizens concerned regarding the Thompson Springs Fire District? None. We'll move on to approval minutes. Minutes from June 18th. Everyone get a chance to review those included in the packet.
Motion made by Mayor McGann, seconded by Greg Halliday. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next up, ratification payment bill. Boy. Grant item to approve Thompson Spring Fire District 7/16/2019. Total bill $474.07. Total bill payroll $1,000.00.
Motion made by Lori Patterson. Second by Terry Moore. I'll call for a roll call vote. Terry Halliday?
Aye.
Terry McGann?
Yes.
Terry Moore?
Aye.
Lori Patterson?
Aye.
Evan Clapper?
Yes.
It is not necessary that Mary joined us. I believe it was 404. Next up is Fire Warden's report. I don't see here, so we will move on to new business. Anyone have any new business to make on the agenda?
So I just want to bring that up. Maybe you can get out there, but the fire warden, the county fire warden, has nothing to do with Thompson Springs. I would say if you're going to put the fire warden on the council of the Thompson Springs,
gotcha. Truly noted. Any objection to removing the fire warden's report as a standing item on our Thompson Springs regular meeting?
How did you say that?
We've just got it as a standing agenda item, and so maybe for our next meeting we could remove that, unless that's going to really rock anybody's vote. All right.
I'm happy to go second.
Seeing none, that brings us to the end of the agenda, and I will adjourn this meeting at 4:11. Now 4:12, and I'd like to call to get to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Grand County Council on July 16th, 2019. Those present are Greg Halliday, Mary McGann, Terry Moore, Lori Patterson, Evan Clapper, Liz Dillon, Chris Sayers. And with that,
Travis, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Next up, approval of minutes.
Commodities that are still making some money in the recycle business.
first app that was talked about. We had a ribbon cutting for our new neighbors. Things seem to be moving along very well. There were two fires at the landfill and on the 4th of July that we put up with it. From the town this evening, so we had a water truck up there and a team ready to act, and they acted quickly and nothing spread, so we were really pleased about that. Was unable to attend the homeless coordinating committee, so I don't have anything to report on that. The other meetings, we had our workshop on Friday. It went very well, and I learned a lot. I really appreciated the efforts of our planning department and our county attorney. Well, I went to the housing task force meeting, I think 5 years ago when I joined the council, there was very little movement on creating secure housing for the community, and I think a lot coming down the pipe right now. It is very exciting, and they have a group to hire to help with managing and monitoring the DB system so that the housing will stay affordable. The housing authority is working with the housing trust.
Yeah.
It's all interconnected. But she's very excited and has started. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg, you ready?
Yep.
All right.
So, if you attended a couple of meetings, one was the Thompson Second Service Center, that's the water board up in Thompson Springs. They've got a new operator named Ryan Bell. He used to do it in the past, he's doing it again. To your question before Gary about the output of the spring, they're running at 93 gallons a minute. Okay. Their budget is in the black today, so everything's looking pretty good. Since their new operator doesn't live up there, lives in Moya, they're going to be getting an assistant to help him that actually lives in Boston. So if they have problems, they have somebody right there that can make a call. They don't have to wait to have an operator run and all that. So that's what's going on up there with that. Also attended the Historic Preservation Commission. Still working on finding funding to renovate the Blue Bridge, getting some positive feedback from the local residents that are interested in seeing that structure rebuilt. And that's all I got for him. And that's it.
I forgot to report on the meeting we had with the elected officials and how it went really well. And I believe we decided during that meeting to have it quarterly rest of the time.
Yes, I attended actually two Moab Steel District meetings, and I want to thank immediately Councilman Wells and Chris Bears for stepping in and really helping out and getting some quick action on some of the issues that were at stand in recent times with the steel population. I think things are looking like they're getting to be more controlled still have probably another few batches who submitted to the civil to dealing with, but we made a big push now to continue to date on a regular basis. And that going through a lot of details, all I can say is that Chris and Drew have put in a great deal of energy, and as did a lot of the people in the county from the airport all the way to the road department that will help avert what could have been a much more serious situation. So I want to thank you for that. Then I also went to Planning Commission, and there was discussion on the Hanson property, which is the property up behind Wyndham, that was they were planning for a high density overlay on that. There was a fair amount of discussion on that with regard to location of buildings, with regard to water in the water retention pond that sits above that property. And then concerns of citizens that are adjacent to it that have springs from the aquifer that comes down from above. There wasn't any action. Well, actually, there was action taken on that, but it will come to the council. It will probably show up with the same questions that we'll be looking at. And then Euro Crossings, CDB also came before the Planning Commission.
Runners and all the other non-motorized users in the Mill Creek
Street, so it's great to kind of see a lot of planning going in there as well. As Mary said, I had a lunch with elected officials, which was insightful for us to kind of see where everybody was coming at and kind of say, what's going on. I also met with the Grand County Cemetery Maintenance District. At that meeting, we approved the 2019 tax rate for their budget, so they're on top of all their housekeeping, bookkeeping sort of stuff. They're doing a great job out there. Also, approved the purchase of a 3TX backhoe, which is built specifically for saving grades. So, that's kind of exciting. And then I met with the EMS Special Service District, and they surplus vehicles and other equipment that they don't need, and it's kind of some good neighborly, I don't even want to call it trade, but it looks like some other organizations in the community are going to be able to take advantage of some of the old ambulances and trucks and things like that. So that was nice to meet with them, and worked on figuring out a lease for that area up there. The old senior center, the American Legion building, just trying to get a plan in place because those guys, as a reminder, are showing the CID with the request to build a shed up there on the hill. And we just want to make sure that it really is a win-win for both sides without tying either side down. That's all I got. Kurt, you want to jump right in and sit up there and let the other one do you need a minute?
No, I don't think so. Working.
You already did that part of the two that are on the mosquito, but.
Yeah, everybody's working really hard on the mosquitoes issue, and so we've got a discussion item on some of the financial arrangements we make for that. But I think we're not out ahead of it, but we're plugging away, and that's going well. There's a wilderness evaluation workshop, I think next week, for the Forest Service Management Plan process in Green River that I'm planning to attend. Had a call last week with Taylor Jones of the City Council with a firm. I forget the acronym now, but her name is Margaret Bailey, and they deal with transportation and congestion issues in national parks and recreation management areas. And it was a really good exercise to go through. I think what Taylor and I are discussing with Margaret is to have her host what would be kind of a peer review panel, including the author of the economic study that the Park Service commenced, and an academic from USU that deals with transportation issues. Margaret's company has brokered a lot of partnerships with concessionaires and parks for transportation systems, and a few others is kind of a way to review all the work done up to date on the issue and to identify the margin of difference or disagreement in the community and on the panel of the work done to date, so that everyone can kind of move forward on the same page. There's a lot of disconnect, and debate over different alternatives to manage the congestion of parks, and discussing this with Kate Cannon and Galen and Margaret, everyone agreed that having a third party peer review board review everything and kind of hold a town hall type meeting for people to participate in it and ask questions would be helpful in kind of getting everyone moving forward in unison. So that was helpful. We went over just the budget for that and the scope of work that Caitlin and I are refining, and I think you guys are going to like what we proposed, so we're getting close to that. You know, that's all I have.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. That's it all fixed for
the report. I think that's what they're really busy. A lot of the field things stuff, but we'll go into more detail on
I just put at your in front of you the report we got this afternoon from the Sheriff's Department. The one that's in the packet would be reflective of what we received from the city last week. And you can see that on the city one, that's from 2018, during that time frame. Now they have no. So the city has no way of distinguishing whether it's a car, a truck, or a motorcycle, or any vehicle. But their traffic stops from 514 to 518 during the same time frame last year. Last year was 24, this year was 47, and citations last year was 17, and this year was 31. So they weren't quite double, but they were there. But there's no way to tell what they were stopped for. So that was from the city. And the sheriff sent over this afternoon this report that I gave you that does outline during that time frame when Rallying on the Rocks was happening, and I'm sorry I have it unwritten, but we just got it at the last minute. Personal injury accidents were two, a parking problem were one, a reckless driver two, traffic stop six, information request one, extra patrols were six, 911 calls 2 and a phone call 1. So there were 21 incidents during that time. I don't have anything relative to last year to know whether that's an increase or decrease. These were all UCD or ACD, all of these. Yeah. And that's pretty much what Brett Ed, our chief of police, confirmed, that they do have it in effect. However, it is extremely difficult to manage it and make sure that, you know, if people are breaking the law, there's really no way to really find out if they are because of the way the decibels, and it's just pretty complicated. So.
And the sheriff's office tells me, hey, your average UCD did not violate the noise ordinances. And we can't regulate it effectively at the local level. Part of the issue is the driving tax. There are some ideas about ways we can mitigate the noise for driving on the law participants with silencers and such. But that doesn't help in the driving tax.
Right.
Okay. I'm reviewing the administrative rule for motor vehicles. I noticed that in the motorcycle section, specifically says that any motorcycle is not as a the original criteria, the OBI criteria for the vehicle. I don't know if that would apply to UCDs or not, but I do know that a lot of UCDs would have to mark modified on their modifier and OBI version.
Maybe that's where we lobby the legislature, so that they, if it's true legal, that it has to have. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, now that it says that for motorcycles, I'm not sure how, if they come under the motorcycle rule, I'm not sure that regular.
Well, I'm not just saying the problem is evaluating the level of noise, so it's not an accurate question.
Right.
Okay, and then how do you research it independently?
Well, from the standpoint, though, permitting vehicles to market in the county van, it's not outside the responsibility required that they have a common song.
And that's part of the thing, and the sheriff's office is going to be those inspections or participants at the cost of driving the law. So that is some of the stuff that I was going to propose enforcement
item
the last special committee meeting, but that was one of my ideas. I talked with the sheriff's office about it, and they're going to shut it out.
Yeah, I don't know the requirements now exactly. Because you need to be able to identify whether or not the cost is still on there or not.
And I've been taught to think about doing more of an aftermarket silencer, and the sheriff's office is going to support that. And he's exploring that idea, so we can even require those and stop the inspection, but that's all we need to do.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. We're expecting to the fourth one. Next up, I have today the 22 Grand Center report.
So, in 2018, we had $12,240 in revenue with 117 events. And 33 of those were the ones that brought in the revenue. For the seniors, we serve 11,727 congregate meals to 189 undisciplined individuals. The home delivered was 14,989 meals to 99 undisciplined. We provided one-way trip for 22 people for 2,736 trips. We have 120 that participate in different activities, and we help 35 with Medicare. And in September, we had a class that was a fall prevention, and we had 8 districts that finished the class. They did a trip to Glenwood Springs where there were 10 of them, and they went by train and stayed 2 nights. And we did a day trip to Nine Mile Canyon and down on the down on the Blue Mountains, and there was about 12 of each trip.
Looks good. How's the building treating you over there?
Well, it's okay. Sound system is really bad. It works really good until somebody comes in and uses it, and it doesn't work. So.
This is what
we have. Yeah, it works.
What is
that? I don't know. One day we did, when they did the open meeting training, we used the wireless mic, and then when LeGrand came down, it didn't work. And so this Saturday we have that public meeting with the state legislature for the tax system. Hoping that it works.
I've heard some folks steer clear of the Grand Center because of that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Saw them all.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. I wonder, some options there, whether it needs to be replaced or what.
That's right. And I say replace it. This is 14 years. So.
Okay.
And I know that led on to the campaign where they were having problems with the sound and the auditorium and the lunchroom and the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at doing that,
that
really helped.
It would. And I mean, but the sound system itself, you can get it so it works all 3 days. And then like Saturday when we had a funeral service there, it's only 2 days worth. So it just
mm-hmm.
It has a kind of its own.
Do you have some, like an estimate for what that would cost?
I don't, but I will get with Matt and see what we can do.
Okay.
Thank
you. Community and Economic Development. Oh, just please.
All right, you get it for you.
I'll say the best for last.
I just want to give a brief update on what's going to be going on at the airport. We're lined out to do construction, replace our broken taxiway, and upgrade our commercial apron. We got the last piece of that funding last week. Kevin and I went up with Tammy to the permanent community impact board and requesting the remainder of our match funding, which we got in the terms of a $265,000 2.5% loan for 30 years. They just sent it to fund right away so we can actually begin that process of that loan pretty quickly. I just got an email from Alex. The salary part is going to be down here tomorrow. So this is overall summary of the project. We actually are getting 2 different federal grants. I talked in the past about a supplemental infrastructure grant that we got for $4.75 million. We've got the allocated, but not awarded yet, for the $4,573,000 for the remainder of the federal funding. Last year we budgeted $250,000 in PRPC for airport upgrades. And then I guess that's a $265,000 in CID. Finished going, we've got a full review of the bid, and so there's a notice that recommends bid for the construction for a local company, Kilgore DBA with Rand Johnson. for $8.914 million. So that will be for the construction. That'll take place both this fall and in the spring. So in the next coming weeks, we'll be dealing with the public hearing processes for issuing the revenue bond for the CID loan. For that loan, we'll be able to pay it, not having to use any taxpayer funding, using our new airport parking funding revenue. We'll be able to cover the cost of that loan. So we get the benefit, but it doesn't cost any tax dollars. And then we will also, in the consent agenda with the application, even though we've already been nationally recognized for being awarded the supplemental grant, we still have to apply for that grant, and we'll be getting the actual grant paperwork that will come. Hopefully we'll have it in time for the next council meeting, especially for the award of the two grants of 4.75 and 4.57. And then we'll also go through the public hearing process for the issuance of the rest of the bond. Like I said, the construction will take place this fall, for half of it, and the other half in the early, late winter, early spring. The basis of this construction is to fix a broken taxiway that is long past its expected life span. And also with this, we hope to have zero closures that will affect any of the businesses or operations. We might have had a couple of nighttime closures, but we're expecting no interruption in the airport.
Next up, Zachariah.
Okay, just wanted to give you all a brief update on some transportation planning efforts that are underway. So, I think I mentioned to you before that I've been working with Bill Jackson and Curtis Wells and members of the City of Moab to establish a scope of work for a regional transportation plan. Initially, we were conceiving of that as something that would address both regional transportation planning needs with San Juan County and CITLA, the city and the county, and address both the regional scale planning needs and local planning needs, updating our transportation master plan. Since I spoke to you last about that, we have kind of separated out those scopes of work, so there will be a regional transportation planning effort that is largely funded by UDOT, and then we will deal with our local transportation planning updates in-house. We are still looking to collaborate with the City of Moab so that we don't duplicate efforts, and ideally we would look at developing a valley-wide transportation master plan. So that is good stuff, but we are about to, you guys have asked us to commit $10,000 to their regional transportation planning effort. I think that's minimal contribution on our end, and it will pay big dividends in terms of supporting improved transportation outcomes in this region, and it will also help inform our local transportation plans when we get to them. In addition to that, we are working with the City of Moab and UDOT to secure federal funds to study development, the feasibility and development and implementation of a public transit system. So that is very exciting. There are federal funds through what's called 5304 grant program. It comes from the Fed down to the state, distributed by the state, and it's in the 20 match. UDOT has offered again to help with the local match, and so we split the match, which would be $20,000. The program only goes up to $100,000. That would be about $6,700 per entity in the city, county, and UDOT. I will, with my support with your approval, and it doesn't have to be me, but I think that we should also reach out to the National Park Service and see if they would take in a little bit of money for the match on this transit that is not. Because it's a tremendous amount of money. It's not about that, it's about buy-in, it's about, participation in the program. And while the 5304 program cannot go towards the development of a transit system or a shuttle system within a park. In my estimation, you know, the viability of the shuttle system in the park is greatly influenced by a public transit system outside of the park that gets people to that gate. And so they have a vested interest in supporting this, and if they do participate or they get an equal amount, that would drop it down to 5,000 for it. So
what's the amount the request from the
Well, I imagine we would ask them to contribute the same amount as the other entities, so that would be 5,555. The grant program up to $100,000, and then 80/20 match requirement for the local match is 20. That's going forward. So,
have you had any conversations with anyone for the park?
Yeah, so Fairmont County is going to take in money to the regional transportation planning effort. Everett is supplying a letter of commitment to UDOT, I believe. Yeah, pretty exciting, and I think, you know, we should all really acknowledge the increased attention in UDOT is paying to our region. Even Joel and our city manager remarked that you know, the treatment and the collaboration and the communication with us locally far exceeded his expectations based on his experience and a lot of that front. So, what we're trying to do is to keep that momentum rolling.
Excellent. Thanks for taking that on. Any other department reports? Any department heads you can see? Any department accounts? Agency reports? Not seeing any on the agenda. That brings us to the citizens to be heard portion of our meeting, which is the part of the meeting for citizens to speak on an item that is not on the agenda. If you would like to speak on an item that's on the agenda, please fill out one of these cards by the door. Be sure to mark at the top of which agenda item you're hoping to speak to, and then you can pass those up. But please, you introduce yourself.
I'm Joe Kingswick, and you will have received an email from Ruth. Now I've been asked to personally ask you or invite you to the Rotary social meeting that is at 6 o'clock Friday at the end of the week. And so I'm here just to reinforce the email that you have gotten from Luke late this afternoon. And the social will be held at 6 p.m. Friday at Hidden Cruising on South Highway.
It's hard to find.
The other thing that I'd like is just to give you a heads up. When we, the Rotary Club of Moab, originally started working on the Rotary Park, we envisioned having the bike path go from the park down to where it currently is and go over Mill Creek on that King Creek. The other end would have gone up to Sandflat. And the new committee that has been formed would like to revisit the original plan to see if we can still do that. And we have had a brief meeting with the city planning director, and Nora gave us very positive feedback from the city planning. And so we're in our early stages, and we will be meeting with Trailmen to see if we can get them on board as well. But right now is the time to do it because there are site plans being worked on some of the sites where this trail would be going through. So it's urgent if we want to get it done, we need to do it now rather than later. So I just want to give you a heads up that we would like to revisit the original plan for the Rotary Park, which was to have the bike be able to go the whole width of the downtown and of the Sand Flat. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks for that heads up. Any other citizens to be heard?
Yeah, first, I just wanted to start real quick. My name is Travis Mullins. I'm a research scientist in town. I wanted to draw the county council and people's attention and presence to the Clean the Darn Air initiative that got some recent media attention. It's a ballot petition that we're starting to gather signatures for. And the reason I bring it up is, from my perspective, my main day-to-day is publishing science papers and reviewing science papers. I review papers for 16 different journals, soil science, hydrology, ecology, and pretty much most of the work that I do has some kind of indirect flavor of addressing climate change. And for our community, we're kind of right in the spotlight of where the impact is supposed to become quite magnified. You can go back to the early 2000s, really, really high profile peer review publishing basically that we're at the hotspot for the next until the end of the century for extended drought. And I think the Bureau of Reclamation summed it up really well in a 2012 report where between now and 2060, more than 50% of the time they predicted that we're going to be in a 5+ year drought. So the impact of this, and this is a string of science papers, students proceeding to the National Academy of Sciences. These are like where you go to publish when you have something to say. And so, and even just this week, another paper came out that was estimating medical costs from dust inhalation in the Southwest in the U.S. So the last couple of decades, $13 billion worth of medical expenses. By the end of the century, they estimate that for the Southwest to be up to $47 billion in medical expenses due to dust inhalation. And that's directly related to climate change. So what I wanted to do is let everybody here know this is going on. Basically, the Clean the Darn Air Act, if it got passed, would be a modest carbon tax to try and curb air pollution and climate change effects. Obviously, for those of you that follow the federal government, our federal government is relatively inept at getting things done with regards to climate change right now. And so the most effective way to do it is at the local level. And that's why I'm coming to you guys, because not only will this carbon tax help curb air pollution and climate change and set a trend for that, but it also will fund rural development, and it also, the revenue from it will be used to take away and reduce grocery taxes so that this doesn't affect people with lower income. And so I would encourage the county council and folks here to check out the initiative. They have a really nice website. And I don't know exactly what kind of things the county council can do, but a resolution or some kind of letter of support has been developed. If this is a type of policy that you guys believe in and think it's going to be good for the county, I think that could go a long way to help rallying support for that. And it's something that's developed to us right here, right now. So, appreciate your time.
What was the email
address? If you Google Cleaning the Darn Air, that's the name of the... And they've got a really nice website that has the full legalese and different scales of summaries of what the policy is.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Well, any other citizens to be heard? That brings us to the presentations portion of our meeting. Next item K is a presentation on school appreciation and recognition program to the Utah Local Government Trust.
Jared Palmer. Well, I'm excited to be here. I've been here before, and it's good to see familiar faces. And many of you know, I grew up here in Moab, and I see some people out here in the audience that somewhat raised me. I can tell you one thing that hasn't changed here in Moab with regards to climate is the heat. It's still hot here. It's always been hot. I'm going to do a quick little presentation up here on the projector. Those of you who don't know, I know most of the council does, but we do the general liability, property and auto, insurance for the county. We also do the workers' compensation. So this presentation is mostly centered around the workers' compensation piece. Recently, a member of the organization committee here at the county and went through this data with them. And expressed a need to implement a program to discuss and highly recommended for our members.
And so if you don't know, we're an insurance pool. We only insure governmental entities here in Utah. And we're member owned, so we're owned by you. And so it's important to the county with regards to the safety of your employees, and then also with regards to the amount of money you tax and pay for your premium. So I'll walk through this and propose a program to you, the council, and then hopefully we can discuss it further in our safety needs in the future. So I'll walk through a little bit of stuff. I had this on a different PowerPoint, but for some reason I couldn't get it to work, so go walk through it this way. Those of you who don't know what an EMUD is, essentially a scorecard for the county or a credit score for the county with regards to workers' compensation. The target for an EMUD is 1. If you're below 1, you're meeting the expectations with regards to workers' compensation as a county. If you're above 1, which you guys currently are, you're essentially performing above what expectations are, not by the trust, but by the National Council on Compensation Insurance, the national entity. So right now we're operating a little bit higher than what we should be. If you look at this next slide, you can see from 2014 to 2018, the amount of workers' compensation losses that the county has had each year. So as you can see, I've formed those boxes around even the claims on the far right, because there's a couple of things that will impact your EMUD. One is the claim dollar amount you see there, but also the claim frequency. So the more frequently you're having claims, the more it impacts what you guys actually, your scorecard or your performance for that matter. And you can see that I have 2014 dropped off. So how an EMUD works, it takes a three year snapshot, not including your current policy period. So it says 2017, 2016, 2015. Okay, so you can see the yellow box, tan box. That's your current EMUD at 1.55. Okay? So if you look at that, next year it'll probably stay about the same. And that's why I'm saying, that's why I'm here, to pick the chance now to make a change to potentially do better as a county. This is how the EMUD's impacting the county. You can see back years ago, in 2014, your EMUD was below 1, so you're beating expectations, and the county is actually saving money. Okay? And as your claims went up, and as your dollar amount of losses went up, your surcharge went up. You can see every year from 2016 until 2019, the county has paid more money than what they really should have paid based upon your frequency of losses. What we did as a trust is we took, I'm going to skip this slide just for the sake of time. We basically took where your losses are coming from. So this is where your losses in the county are coming from right now. And you can tell that there's a common trend, right? If you were coming from law enforcement, typically is more exposure, right? It's a higher risk job. So you're going to see more claims in that department naturally. But what we are saying is, hey, look at the data and what's up here on the board, and let's approach it in a different method. So what we took is, we took the top 40 members of the trust, Grant County being one of them, and in 2018, the beginning of 2018, we picked the program term, which is what the trust appreciation program is. We said, hey, implement an incentive program for your employees, make teams, okay? Focus on those teams, send out monthly results, and then give excellent appreciation or recognition every single month to the employees. So we took our top 40 members, 50% of those members actually implemented the program, and 50% didn't. Okay? Focus one group is those who did. So there's 20 members who did not implement the incentive program. And we've seen a 7% increase actually in what they did with regards to performance reporting. Okay? So we took 10 years worth of data and claim frequency with those members, and then actually compared it to 2018. As you can see, it's not just a snapshot in time, it's a lot of claims, you know, approximately 2,000 claims a year for 10 years. So it's quite a few claims to compare data again. Those who did actually implement it, they dropped 38%. So we know it works. The county didn't implement it in 2018,
okay, and haven't implemented it so far in 2019, and so that's why I'm here. So we're just trying to make that happen. How we can do this really comes down to these critical components. Okay, I've helped the county develop teams, and we're trying to mold those and adapt those to work better. Every single month, I create reports and send it to the county so that you can see who qualifies and who doesn't. But really, why I'm here is to say, hey, on a monthly reward basis, the council needs to support it from the side of saying, hey, we're willing to pitch a little bit of money at this for a bigger return on savings with regards to premium. So the trust says, hey, if the county participates in the appreciation program, we'll give you 5% of your dental liability premium back in the check, which currently is about $3,800. And then we'll give you an additional 5% on your workers' compensation premium, which is about $8,000. So the trust automatically pitches in $12,000 a year if you guys are willing to actually implement the program. $3,800 of which is coming in a check if you can just apply directly to it. So you have $3,800 of free money, essentially, to utilize towards the program. Whatever excess amount that you need, that comes from you and Chris and trying to figure out, hey, what can we do financially with the budget? And I don't think they're tight. And I can see on the agenda we got plenty of mosquito stuff coming down and adjustments and so forth. But, the slide up there says easy savings, about $50,000. Just by cutting a couple of your losses and a couple of those bigger claims with regards to work comp, the county would automatically save $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year if we just focus and even cut it in half, which is easy. So that's what I came to present. Ultimately, it comes down to management commitment. I appreciate the management here in the county because they are committed and they're doing their best to try and implement different safety measures to reduce losses. You know, we talked about money and premium, but at the end of the day, it comes down to workers. Who's going home safe? Who's getting injured while they're here? Who potentially isn't going home? So that being said, I would just, this is just a quick little report. You can see this is what I send essentially every single month to the county, very similar to this. Those who are highlighted in red are those who were injured or had an accident. Those who are in black didn't, and those who are in red don't qualify. So you can see in this example, Team 4 didn't qualify, and Team 1 didn't qualify in October, Team 4 didn't qualify in September, and so forth. So I send this to the county every month. At the end of the day, what you guys need to do is figure out what incentive you're going to do. Any questions on this, thought process, what your feelings are with regards to actually implementing an incentive program or incentivizing employees to not have, auto accidents, property accidents, workers' compensation accidents. So really, at the end of the day, it could be spending money and your taxpayers. So.
Thank you for your
time.
So I think we do have one department, that really department started. That's something. I will say that in the past, the job position for the risk manager, I guess, what is the name of that risk manager? But I've been my key deputy. And she's never really had enough time to really put to work. And so I believe that we reorganized the HR director job to include that now, which is the name now. And ultimately, the idea is to hire the name star assistant so that Renee would have more time to begin the project and administer them. So that's the overall plan kind of moving forward. But it's just been tough really to have a community really truly dedicated to this. But it's important. Another thing that I'd like to point out, and I don't know if it's causative, but certainly correlated, and that's that the more overtime we see in the sheriff's department and elsewhere in the county, the higher the incidence of worker compensation plan. So that's really another side effect of not being able to keep implementation. And it causes both, you know, worker compliance, but in our renewal rate. And so that's what you're saying about to make, you know, good strides in terms of making the salaries of the clients more competitive. But we're still in a position of struggling to fill those positions, and there's still a lot of overtime. So I do think that plays a factor in it. And certainly in these types of programs can help too. But I think you have to realize that as an employee, there wasn't a lot of overtime that they wanted to set them all to on the job end.
Sure. And I'm curious about how staff can go to other counties and how other counties handle the risk management.
That's a great question. One example I would give you in a fair comparison, not necessarily size, but with regards to EMUG, would be like Summit County. So Summit County had a higher EMUG than what you have currently. So you have a 1.55, theirs was well above that. And mainly due to workers' compensation lawsuits. But Summit County did implement the program. It took them a while, they implemented it. And currently, Summit County is seeing even over a 38% increase with regards to claim frequency. And so they're actually at an all-time low with regards to their workers' compensation claims. Call it what you will, but, you know, ironically, since they implemented it, I think they've had 2 months that they haven't had teams qualified. And so another would be Cass County. Cass County is also implemented. Even though they had a better EMUG, their EMUG is still below 1, they've implemented it as well, and they've seen direct results from it. So it's a good thing. You know, you can take the $3,800 that we give you and implement it, and you know, give the monthly reward based upon that, however you wanted to structure it. The reason that I'm there is just to try and gain overall management commitment support from everyone so that we can ultimately take care of the county in a respective way, really. Because it is, over the last 8 years, it's been quite a dramatic change with regards to what the county actually pays. And it's directly due to, I think, like Chris said, there's a multiplicity of different reasons. But heck, you got people working too much overtime. You got new employees that don't have a lot of tenure. Potentially, you're getting an aged workforce where the injury is more susceptible to injury. But this is a good way to remind employees on a monthly basis about safety and keep them on their toes with regards to essentially not being dumb while they're working. So, you know, any other questions, concerns, thoughts?
One more.
Cool. So, Summit
County has a strict system. Once Summit is closed,
when the president has a finance and university happens? Yes, countywide.
Do you think they do that? By the way,
I'm curious about the difference.
I heard what
the office
was. Was it only
in our
department?
Yeah, and I do think there's been a multiplicity of reasons. Okay, so county hasn't implemented up to this point. But really, yeah, Summit County implemented countywide. It took them a little bit. It took them about 4 months in 2018 to actually grasp it and get all their leadership around it from department heads and even their council as well. But they did it. And they've had a little bit of kickback, I'll be honest with you, with regards to employees. You know, you see employees highlighted or red on that list. Nobody wants their name in red. And nobody wants what they call, quote unquote, public humiliation. But the fact of the matter is public info anyhow. And it's caused people to gain more respect with regards to their job and essentially accept more accountability for what they do. So here at the county, I think it's more of a time constraint as to why people potentially haven't implemented it. You know, the roads has. I think it'd be more beneficial for the county to focus on, you know, maybe the top two departments, the sheriff's department, and they focus on one department, that might be the starter, and then move into other areas if if you decide you want to continue. I'm here to help. I'm willing to do anything. If you guys have any questions, concerns, shoot me an email. Chris has my email. He has my cell phone. Someone wants to call me anytime.
I'm
going to
take like a moment to just acknowledge for anything. This is our new HR director. This is also our new verification committee. So, are there any questions for this at all?
Is not here, but I have business cards for her. Thank you so much for giving me a few minutes on your agenda this afternoon. As you indicated, my name is Jim Peters. I'm with the Administrative Office of the Court, otherwise known as the AOC. The AOC is the state agency that serves as staff to the Judicial Council. And the Judicial Council is the governing body for the judicial branch of government. In all of Utah. So, I'm here on their behalf. The Judicial Council is a body that's chaired by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and they oversee the Supreme Court, as well as the Court of Appeals, and the District Court, and the Juvenile Court, and all the Justice Courts. So you may not have understood that there's a connection between the Judicial Council and your Justice Court, but there is, and that's why I'm here. Not the happiest of occasions. If it were up to us, Judge Tubbs would not be leaving the bench in the next couple of months, but there's a state statute that requires judges to retire when they reach the age of 75. So I thought it'd be productive if I presented a little bit of information about how the process works for replacing Justice Court Judge. I believe that happened here last in 2011. Maybe that predates a lot of you. And certainly there have been statutory changes that have been made since then as well. So I wanted to explain how that works and take your questions. Amy in particular will be working closely with you as we move forward over the next several months to make this happen. So please, if you have any questions, let me know. I don't have a PowerPoint, and I apologize for that. There's more information than I thought you might have wanted to see up there. But essentially, there are three groups that have to work together in order to get a new judge selected. And you're one of them, and you'll be involved up front, and then you'll step back for a little while and let the nominating commission do its work, and then you'll be involved again at the end when the ultimate selection is determined. And because you're kind of the executive as well as the legislative branch of the county, you'll not only be making that selection, but you'll ratify that selection, and then you'll inform me what you've decided so that we can get that person certified by the Judicial Council. And only at that point is that new judge ready to take the bench. So like I say, there's the AOC that's involved. There's a nominating commission that you and I will work together to staff. And that commission is comprised of five different people. They will get applications that the AOC will request. You've got a press release ready to go out tomorrow if you want to have a look at that and suggest any changes. We can certainly do that tonight. But basically, applications will be solicited from anyone who's 25 years of age, who's been a resident of the county or an adjoining county for the last 6 months, and has a high school diploma. We need to get at least 9 applications over the first 15 days or we have to extend the opening. And if we don't get three qualified applicants after that extension, then it goes statewide. But in the meantime, it stays here fairly local. We would ask that you let the AOC collect those applications. Don't open up a separate announcement on your website or Monster or Indeed, anything like that. It complicates the process substantially. Once the AOC has collected the applications, they'll do background checks on all the applicants. So again, that's not something that you need to do. It's pretty extensive. We check your criminal background. We confirm that they meet the residence requirements. We do a credit check. If they're a member of the bar, we check their legal disciplinary history. We verify their education. If they're attending military service, we confirm that. And if they're a sitting judge, then we check with the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission to make sure they don't have any concerns. So we vet these people thoroughly so that you have as much information as possible. Once you receive the slate of applicants later in the process, we can dig deeper if you'd like us to. So we want to make sure that you know exactly what you're getting and who's required. The staff, the nominating commission, there's five people that will be members of it. And again, this is a little unusual here in Grand County because there's a county entity and there's the entity that's going to get the judge. So you actually have three slots on that commission. And they can be anybody that you want, as long as they're not elected officials, do a couple of different things that you don't want them to be. You wouldn't want them to be applying for the position. they can't be closely related to people who are applying for the position. But we have the opportunity to put three people on the commission. I would give some serious consideration to those people who would be the best suited to determine what it takes to be a good judge. Any of the past or present clerical staff might be a great fit. Attorney's office is always a great fit. But something that that you might consider in this job in order to get somebody that's as good as we can. And I want to be clear about that. If it were up to us and if it weren't for that statute, we would be delighted to keep him on board. I'm sure he'd feel the same way. So this is not a happy occasion, but it is what it is. And so I just thought that we ought to have you as well informed as possible as we move ahead. So the nominating commission gets comprised. The ALC provides the applications to it. They meet at least twice. The first time they go through all the applications, and the purpose of that meeting is simply to decide who they want to interview. So they'll eliminate some and they'll select others, and again, Andy will be doing more background checks on them in the meantime, but that second meeting will be the interviews themselves. Those meetings start out with the opportunity for the public to provide comments. We'll send a judge in to provide their perspective as to what it takes to do the job well. And then that commission will need an executive session, both to discuss the applications and to conduct the interviews. Once they've done that, they'll select a slate of 3 to 5 people that will ultimately end up with you. But before it does, we open it up for public comment. And so at that point, you haven't officially gotten the slate. We get the public to weigh in on these potential candidates. If there are negative comments that come back, then it goes back to the nominating commission to decide whether or not they want to advance that name or not, based on the negative comment and that applicant's response to it. But after the application period and the 2 meetings and the 10-day comment period, then the names ultimately do come to you. And you'll have the opportunity to interview. Like I say, if you want us to dig deeper on the background, we can certainly help with that. At that point, please understand that the nominating commission has to keep all of their discussions confidential. It's not something that they're going to be at liberty to discuss with you, but you can certainly interview and investigate as much as you want on your own once you get to that stage. So there's a bit of a difference in the process depending on whether your ultimate selection is a sitting judge or not. If that person is not a sitting judge, and there aren't many around, so they probably won't be, then before that person can take the bench, they have to go through a new judge orientation up in Salt Lake City. And so that takes a week. And after that, if they pass the exam, then the judicial council will certify them. Then they take the oath of office, and then they're good to take it in. That's different than a state court judge, because typically once the Senate ratifies the governor's pick, they're good to go, and they get an orientation months later. So with the Justice Court, that certification is a prerequisite for sitting on the bench. So that's it in a nutshell. We'll be doing press releases along the way, starting with the one calling for applications, as well as that slate of 3 to 5 finalists, as well as when the committee is going to be meeting, as well as who your ultimate pick is. So really, we're here to assist you and to take your questions now and along the way, and to try to get this done in such a time that there isn't a gap between this post-retirement and the new person taking the job.
So with that in mind, is there currently anyone serving on the nominating committee? I thought the term was 4 years.
Yeah, I'll have to check with Amy on that. I would suspect not, just because, again, the last time this commission was convened, it was 2010. So any of those 4 years terms would probably lapse, but we'll double check that.
And then what kind of timeline are we looking at for the nomination, committee nomination? Do we need a committee to get to make a committee?
I'll let you decide that. We can start moving forward as quickly as that commission is concerned. Like I say, you can release that press release tomorrow. We would give them 15 days to apply. So the way we've got it right now, applications are being no later than August 5th. Again, we may have to extend that if we don't get at least 9 people who qualify. So sometime between now and August 5th, we have another meeting on August 6th. And I don't know who you want us to work with, Bruce or through someone else, as far as the 3 people that you would put on the commission. We'll be working on our 2 at the same time. To your point, the first thing we'll investigate is whether or not there are all 3 vacancies that you would need to fill. But we'd like to work on bringing in applications and comprising the nominating commission at the same time. So that once the deadline for applications is up, we've got a commission that's ready to go, and we can schedule meetings and start working through it. November seems like it's a long ways away, but it really isn't. And to get this group together twice, and then to get the names to you and the public comments, it's all going to go very quickly. So.
The reason it's November is because that 1075 was the fourth.
The statutes allow for a temporary judge to sit. Again, who sits in your justice court is always up to counsel. So even on a temporary basis, we need a resolution that says either we appoint Judge Hagelson and Judge Stream or somebody who's nearby. You can take a judge who's currently sitting in another justice court, or you can take one of our senior judges. I don't know that there are any really new lines. So options are going to be pretty limited. And again, I don't know what anyone's intentions are. What I didn't fully explain a minute ago was that if ultimately a sitting judge applies and is selected, then that new judge orientation isn't necessary. And so that cuts down on that gap considerably. But we don't want to put non-sitting judges at a disadvantage, so we would try to organize a an orientation program that would still allow the new pick to take the bench in November. At this point, there's not one scheduled until January, but I would see what we could do about that.
Okay. My next question is really well involved to our budgeting and off budgeting. I know that we received some information on salary range for objects in particular caseload, which is typically considered part time. So it's unclear to me whether or not that's subject to one of this particular caseload receive benefits.
That's a few.
I'm just wondering if there anything that's typical across the state of Utah or what part-time.
It really varies from one market to another. I don't know if in this market you're going to need to provide benefits in order to attract a desirable pool. Statutorily, you're not required to. There's just that salary range. Whatever it was, 50-90% of a district court judge, but then it's prorated by the caseload. So it talks strictly of salary, not of overall compensation. So whatever other perks you want to add to it in order to attract the candidates that you want, that's up to you. If it hasn't been receiving benefits and you want to back off from that now, this would be the time to do it.
Well, maybe you haven't been, but you know, the voluntary decline of that. I think that over the course of time, they increased the salary well above what was suggested. I think in part because it wasn't being partly maybe that too, but I guess the question is whether you have to negotiate salary and benefits with the prospective judge really wanted to.
Judge before the tub to take benefits from us. So that is something to discuss if we want to keep offering benefits to our judges. But it is exciting to see.
So,
do you want to
recommend that in the negotiation salary that we establish an upper end that came up to the full salary and benefits? You know,
hard to know what you need to offer before you've seen.
I just want to make sure that whatever we know is accurate with our intentions for what we're willing to offer.
So will we be considering this announcement of a few weeks or just coming until you guys sending it out?
Great question. Typically what we do is we'll release it to the bar, we'll release it to the media. But as far as getting it on your website and other channels of distribution that you typically use, something that we don't do, but we'd encourage you.
But your announcement includes the salary range?
It does. It includes the salary range, and at this point it does indicate that benefits are included. So that's something that we'll need to confirm before we release it.
Okay.
So I guess that's why I may ask this up now, because we approve it, we want to make sure that wrong thing is what we're doing.
I mean, we could even go, we could say, and may include benefits, or something like that, so that, you know, the door is open for you later.
Might be a better
hold.
Yeah.
That's
just
worth pointing out
that
our salary that is on the
But like I say though, and we're including benefits and the actual total compensation price, which is that to go well above what the payment now. So I just want to point that out that it's not necessarily the case that even if it's a lower salary, we're going to end up spending less money on the bill towards the way that it's drafted right now.
We leave it with a simple may include benefits, or do we even need to put it on the tonight for the
I mean, the other thing I could do, Chairman, is just not make any reference to that. I'll say the salary, but, and then that can be an open discussion later as the players come in.
I think
it's
one of the options, but I would say it was, well, one of the ones we offered is to negotiate people.
Do you have any preferred wording for the?
I would probably go with the name of the benefit option. Then you go to your department.
Okay.
So we make that tweak and then.
The person that's residing in the home at least twice in 2017, 2018. Both times they were saying that we will not touch their, they call it a bamboo, but it's not bamboo. So we sent out an individual notice to control. They did find the card saying that they did receive that for the property owner. They haven't removed it as of about 3:10 today when I drove by there again on the, coming down this way. So that's why we're wanting to have it declared, because it is a high priority for the state of Utah. But since they didn't do with the individual notice, the next step is to have it declared as a public nuisance. And that has to be approved by the county council.
A little bit of background, so I've been working with them on that. So, with Orlando Donax, who's notified them, it was Diane Sandu. He sent numerous property owners that had it in town, and everyone else was in there. They're investing in the grant program at the county level, which is getting money for a place to remove it, if you're willing to remove it. So, this is to help property owners to get it to have. Refuse to do so. There's a very specific statutory process to get through this point and to send that as well. Statutory process and there's a document. There's been notice to the owner, to find for the last notice to be heard. We had an appeal hearing that we made to the owner. We had an appeal to the owner. We did not choose to appeal. So we're at this point. This is our next step before we can enter the property and remove the use. And then there's on the
and it's a class 1B noxious weed.
Please. I'm here for that, and we started working on this was a couple of years ago. The people that removed the trees voluntarily were given the opportunity to replace.
Right, and that's still with the grant we currently have, still have that in there. Right. Right, and on this current property, we have removed it from their neighbors because it has spread from that property onto their neighbor's property. So we have removed it from their neighbor's property, and if something's not done on that property, it's going to spread back into the neighbor's property again.
Okay.
I move to approve the declaration of nuisance for the noxious weed
Orlando Donax,
commonly known as Diamond Reef, which is accepted the drill property located at 408 Hudson Street and authorized to carry the city bus.
Motion made by
Barry
Zadillas, seconded by Lloyd Patrick. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I mean, this is only the second time we've actually come to the county council to have a property declared as a public nuisance. So it's not something that we really want to do very often, so we can avoid it. Preferably, the landowners will work with us.
I recognize that. I know it's been a lot of work to get to this point to reduce the need for the county, and appreciate the diligence of all that.
Excuse me.
Next up is item 10, adopt the proposed ordinance to apply to high density housing overlay district 5, to a lot located at 1991 Starbuck Lane, Zachariah.
Okay, so you held a public hearing at the last regular council meeting, so as is customary, you wait until the next regularly scheduled meeting to take action on an item that requires legislative action. So in this case, the legislative action is applying the High Density Housing Overlay District 5 to the parcel at 1991 Starbuck Lane. This would facilitate a two-lot subdivision, which has received a conditional preliminary plat approval by the Planning Commission, that approval being conditioned upon the County Council applying the overlay. Included in the packet are the preliminary plat materials as well as the development agreement that would govern these restrictions on the HDHO development. So as you know, the HVHO lots or units that are created in these overlays require that 80% of the lots or units being developed are deed restricted for primary residents who are actively employed. And in this case, because it would be a two-lot subdivision, both lots would be deed restricted. We did have a couple of verbal comments at the last public hearing and some written comments throughout the course of this application being processed. Staff's recommendation is to adopt the proposed ordinance and record the development agreement when the final plat is approved down the road.
We did receive one citizen comment card with our citizen's first. Dale, come on to introduce yourself.
My name is Dale Houston. I have an adjacent property at 1981 Starbuck Lane. And I sent out an email that explains exactly why I think the developers should be required to provide extension and HVHO overlays of property. I'm just here to reiterate those things, and it's all based around a disproportionate economic impact for the developer versus the adjacent owner. As you may have seen in the email, the developer has a chance to deduct the cost. He also has a chance to be reimbursed for it. The owners adjacent to that have out-of-pocket, expense for such a test. So, for the developer, it's a cost of doing business. The adjacent owner potentially could be on a fixed income or working locally at service industry wages and have a few spikes, let's put it that way. Also the developer would have equipment on site with experienced workers and would be more or less ready to go. And, if you try to hire helpers, it's hard to find someone to go to work. So, I just think that if the overlay is approved, I suggest under the conditions of testing. And if the sunset clause, as is, further in the agenda, gets renewed or whatever, if you go for more than 300 units, I suggest that you change it at that time to get confidence. Okay?
Thank you for that.
I'll just comment, you couldn't change the ordinance tonight. I don't see, I think you got that. But just for your clarification. I also think that it would be reasonable to include that requirement. I also think that in the context of this larger discussion about the high density housing development overlays, that is a reasonable requirement. When we were talking about multifamily and larger scale projects, that density requirement is implicitly required by other elements of the land use code. It's not so obvious with the subdivision is so small.
Sir?
I want to make sure that tonight what we're voting on is just to allow them to use the high-density overlay. We're not voting on the plat.
Well, the Planning Commission, as I said, already took action on the preliminary plat. They provided a conditional approval, meaning that it would not be effective or meaningful until the contingencies of that approval are met. And in this case, the contingencies, or at least the primary one, is that that you as the legislative body actually apply the overlay. So if you apply the overlay through a legislative action tonight, then the preliminary plat that the Planning Commission conditionally approved would govern the development. If they wanted to do something different, they would have to come back to the county and request approval of changes to that preliminary plat, which is included in your package for reference.
So if we were going to require a stamp,
I think you could include it in the motion.
So, with this process,
when we were attending development fees for the preliminary plan. I guess the question would be if they can deny and that becomes invalidated, do they get their money back or anything?
No, they are these developers.
Sure.
Yeah, so the developer, you know, is given that option to expedite the process, right? Developers always kind of balance time and money and, you know, entry to market. And so while we don't necessarily recommend it, it is available as an option.
Well, I would move to adopt the proposed ordinance to apply the high density housing overlay district 5 to a lot located at 1991 Starbuck Lane and authorize just that also be done. Motion made by Chris Wells.
You could generally refer to it as a 6-foot privacy fence.
So, I guess, my thought is, I mean, it's a little bit
I'm
I move to adopt the proposed ordinance to apply the high density housing overlay district by HCHD-5 to a lot located on Mexican Orange Lane with a 6-foot high extent required and authorized to chair the final associated document.
Moved by Mayor DeGears, seconded by Terry Miller. Discussion.
I think it's fine. We're talking about around the whole property or
so now that they could be saved in the property.
Which means the exterior is the parcel.
Okay, so because there's like the water main and the sewer behind him, and then he's got the front on the road.
Well, he couldn't do a privacy fence in the front setback, so it would just be, you know, along the perimeter of the parcel where it would be allowed. I think it's quite clear.
Any further discussion? I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Let's pass the meeting. Next up, item O. Adopting proposed resolution approving a conditional use permit for 7 Mile Park located at 15542 North Highway 131.
L. Can you hear me now? No.
It's supposed to be along the edge, but you might need to go to the other side.
Okay, as is the last agenda item, you call the public hearing at your last regularly scheduled meeting on July 2nd. This is an application for a conditional use permit to develop the 7 Mile Park campground located on North Highway 191. And the Commission voted to recommend approval of this. We talked about the details of the development at the last meeting, the public hearing. And so tonight we have a chance to vote on it. We did receive some written comments. Two in particular, both had to do with signage to ensure the delineation between the private zone campground and the public right of way, right access to 7 Mile Bridges Road. I didn't add that as a condition of approval because I think it's fairly self-evident and doesn't rise to the level of the condition. But it's certainly noted by staff and we can work with the applicant to make sure that that signage is appropriate. In fact, I would probably make sure that the applicant works with those departments that so that might come to but otherwise staff recommends approval of this. I will just remind you all that this project is before you because the application staff is prior to that moratorium.
I would move to adopt the proposed resolution approving a conditional use permit for 7 Mile Park located at 13542 North Highway 181, conditioned upon the following. Number one, applicant shall identify the extent and hold harmless Grant County for and against any use improvements to public rights away as a result of this campground. Number two, applicant dedicates to Grant County proposed use of 44 foot wide right of way for Colley 790 Road, which right of way shall be made between 2 feet in the direction from the center line of the roadway. And if as built condition, number three, applicant agrees that
PM and I bridge the road may need to realign through the applicant's property with the advance written permission of the applicant and no cost to the applicant. Number four, Green County, accepts that portion of Gemini bridges the road crossing the applicant's property in as is condition and agrees to maintain roadway in similar or better condition. And number five, applicant shall indemnify the defendant Old Harmless Green County for the install improvements to that portion of Gemini bridges the road crossing the applicant's property if necessary as a result of applicant's development and use of 7 mile park by the Union Pacific Railroad. Aaron, do you know the Department of Transportation and also the Chair of the Panel?
Motion made by Curtis Wells. Seconded by Roy Tashman. Any further discussion?
Roy? I guess I'm assuming the applicant's okay with 1 through 5?
Yes, and they also have to be. Okay. So, most of these are included. Because if it means circumstance where the private campground is bisected by a public road right away, and also because of its adjacency to the railroad track and movement reasons. So it took a long time to work through these issues. That's one of the reasons why there was so much delay in between paying the transaction and bringing it to you. It also requires state approval of water and sewer in this removal. So you can set those two issues that accounted for the delay. But again, all of these conditions may change in this development, and that's because this development is
looking at that property, I understand that there isn't water out there, but I'm curious to know why the residents for where it is adjacent to the property is so well treated, and we can't get trees of much substance on this property. Is it water being called to that? Do they have water in that location? What situation do you know?
I don't know if we're certain. I would imagine that property is on a well. And I believe we have, with us tonight, we can see that there is water that can be found through wells in the region. When staff was reviewing that particular item for approval, to that they would require one tree for two RV spaces, we felt that it was prudent to save the water resources rather than planting trees for aesthetic reasons. Certainly for the comfort of the guests, but seems like it would be a fairly monumental effort to get mature trees growing in that area. So you can certainly query the property owner on that matter.
Would the property owner care to?
I drill water wells. My name is Tracy Baldwin. Tracy Baldwin, I own the property. I drill water wells for a living, and the Moab fault line intersects the property out there, so there is no water on the west side of the highway to speak of. The east side of the highway, my property does go across there. I do have a water well. The Arkansas National Park is protesting my water well. They're protesting everyone's water well. A very limited amount of water in that water well, and I do have trees. I am planting cedar trees out there, which will be native to this area. I tried cottonwood trees. They take way too much water, so I'm trying to promote water wise use out there. Don't waste it. I don't want to take water and sewer to every site out there. I'm going to have a service center where people can dump their sewer, fill up their water, be as water conscious as they can be, since this is a desert and we are running out of water. So the trees, yes, I do have some trees planted out there. I probably actually didn't meet the amount of trees for the site, but they're not on each and every site actually.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you're doing. I'm just wondering how we can reduce some of the visual impact, as that is probably one of the first things that people see when they drive into the Moab Valley, coming in. And again, I don't have any really strong bias.
provide, you know, trigger parts for recreational vehicles or any of that.
Right.
More so, though, I am sensitive to the first impressions that the other made when a visitor comes to the valley. And so I would encourage you to see if you can figure out a way to come up with other ideas, perhaps maybe not trees, but some other things that may be for helping with the
visual effect.
Yeah, the visual effect.
Right. Right.
You know,
I totally understand that too. I don't want it to be an eyesore out there. It's the same thing, just to turn off the devil's point. It's the entrance to Moab. I'm trying to make it as nice looking as I can do for what's
there. Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, there may be, you know, structures or gate or whatever. But,
right.
You know,
well, somewhere down the road, possibly just even a barrier fence across the 191 in the front, but still. People driving down the highway, they're going to be able to see over that. Even, like I said, I'm trying to get cedar trees out there. If I can ever get my water well approved and from the Arches National Park where I can use that water, then I would have more water available to plant trees. But I hate to waste the water in a desert.
I guess I just would encourage you to be ingenious about how you solve that problem.
Right.
Conditional requirements that were placed on the back rate of the job black fence that I'm referring to that required as a condition of approval for visual barriers and how many of those back rate of the job would take a long time for those fences to be seen as well. Maybe this is, you know, I think they would have been better, but staff couldn't come up with a great recommendation, although I think, you know, a burden could be considered the auditor, but
I don't want to hold up the process, but I just encourage you, you know, the
keep the visual, yeah. I'm on the same page. I don't want it to be an eyesore. I postponed doing anything with this property for this long just because I don't want it to be an eyesore out there. I like Grand County and I want it to be beautiful and keep it that way, you know. But then my bridges go through my property and people are parking there and I have a parking lot and I'm trying to help the chaos that's in this county right now, you know.
Is there any possibility of having a gray water collection point for water to treat?
The Division of Water Quality is actually looking into that to use gray water to do that. It's not approved yet, but yeah.
People generate a lot of gray water.
Yeah.
That could really
be used
to water.
Yeah. The problem with my sewer service sensor though is it's very high solid.
Yeah.
You know, coming out of the canister. So there's gonna be a lot of nitrates for that. Could be used, could be a process sensor. Another fellow looking at developing out there has even considered the thought of going clear to Dalton Wells and piping water back to all of our seriously. Back to everyone's property back here because the water is such an issue. Dalton Wells does have good water, or a lot of water, but it's not good water. It's 2,000 GGF water, so could be used, but it's a matter of getting even right away down there. To, you know, and then Moab and the Kansas could use that. They don't have their own water, they have to haul their own water. Everybody, just a water system out there, a public water system, could be developed somewhere out there and used for all topics.
We had a motion on the table. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is item C. Adopting a proposed ordinance revising overnight accommodation use rights in use table 2.1 in section 4.6. Overnight accommodation overlay district, the Grand County Land Use Code, and the Grand County Zoning Act.
we're a little bit more dry than the rest of the basin, probably a little bit more vulnerable to drought than the rest of the basin. So we need to look at those conservative numbers as we move forward. And so what I'm here to tell you is that on top of that, then when we look at these kind of decreased supply estimates, we also have these predictions of mega drought. And so how is our water supply going to fare if we have a 10-year drought? And in the literature, these potential droughts are described as analogous to the dust bowl at work. And so if you do some homework and look at the dust bowl, it's not a pretty picture. So what I'm suggesting is that as you move forward with the overlay process, you invest some money and some time into doing the research to plan for all these contingencies. Because if we don't, we're going to get put in a really bad situation. And that's going to be bad for everybody's property rights, period. And so I'll close just by saying I really encourage you to pass this and to consider all of these scenarios very carefully in the overlay planning process.
So I don't have too much to add. We've been working on this planning effort for nearly 6 months now, following the passage of the moratorium on February 6th. For what it's worth, I would just say that we anticipate ongoing planning efforts related to the role of overnight accommodations in this community and our local economy. I think that a vote for this ordinance is not necessarily to be viewed as a vote against overnight accommodations, but rather in favor of balanced and smart growth. This ordinance gives us different mechanism for approval of new overnight accommodation developments and a little bit more control over the rate and volume and scope of growth in a particular sector in concert with other necessary investments for commercial activity. So the ordinance in front of you in the online, well, I guess it's on your dais and also on the online packet reflects changes directed to staff. At our workshop on Friday, and so those would include some text changes in the ordinance language, the whereas statement, as well as the map. In particular, two properties have been added to the overnight accommodation overlay district map, which is part of the zoning map, and those will be discussed, I believe, by our county attorney. So I'm going to go through those in detail, but they are reflected on the current in the online packet and should be on your diet. I will note that I believe in all of the packet changes and over the course of the last few meetings that the use table is not appearing in the online packet. It was in the packet last week, so I have notified the council administrative office to add that to the online packet tomorrow. I don't have any concerns about that jeopardizing the legitimacy of the action taken tonight. But you may just want to explicitly note that in your motion that what would be reflected in the use table is the removal of overnight accommodations as a principal use from all drug districts in table 3.1.4.
For the math remaining. 7 complaints labeled unsent back from various property owners, some of those were represented by council, some of those were not. I looked at each one of these now under complete analysis. This is a case by case analysis in the U.S. Supreme Court law. We're referring to two properties. They're owned by two owners, but one of the properties is technically commercial.
Sure.
There's technically three parcels that have been added to the map upon my recommendation. Those two owners in my analysis, and we discussed that in closed session at the Friday workshop, have viable for the new claim, and litigation is not in the county's best interest, and so I have recommended those be included. One of those is a back parcel for the KOA, and that was rezoned in 2017. Only missed the on the back, they have two extra parcels. They have three parcels. The primary parcel that's developed, and then that parcel that was rezoned in 2017, and then that property was restricted their access through the HOA. This is a primary parcel, and it's serving as a safe building to overlay. That's then a third parcel that I'm not made a recommendation to include. And then the other property is what's called the Moab 4x4 property. It's a property that ventures in the city limits because it's so close to town. It's like a little finger of the county, but it's on my mouth. So I think it does go in. Upon analysis of those two other properties, I've recommended those come up. So the map before you has the three parcels from what the two are included.
Are we ready for a lot of whereas?
I will be starting, so,
Any other disclosures before the vote?
Are we supposed to disclose that we see on it or if we vote on it?
Oh.
Okay, so.
He does.
My board of employees and members said I have to be in the highway accommodation and required to disclose that.
Any others? All those in favor of the motion? Oh, I thought you said after. Okay. So, what we are voting on is an ordinance providing overnight accommodation use rights in sections 3.1b and 4.6 in the Grand County Land Use Code and the Grand County Zoning Act. Whereas, Title 17, Chapter 27A of the Utah Code authorizes Grand County to enact ordinances, resolutions, and rules, and to enter into other forms of land use control and development agreements that the county considers necessary or appropriate for the use and development of land in an unincorporated area of Grand County, including ordinance, resolutions, rules, restrictions, demands, easements, and development agreements governing uses, density, open spaces, structures, buildings, energy efficiency, light and air, air quality, transportation, and public or alternative transportation infrastructure, streets and building orientation and width requirements, public facilities, fundamental fairness and land use regulations, and considerations of surrounding land uses to balance the foregoing purposes of landowners' private property interests and associated statutory and constitutional protections. Whereas, Title 17, Chapter 27A of the Utah Code requires Grand County to provide for the health, safety, and welfare of its residents, improve the peace and good order, comfort, convenience, and aesthetics of the county, protect the tax base, foster state agriculture and other industries, promote the orderly development of urban and non-urban development, provide a fundamental fairness in land use regulations, and facilitate orderly growth and allow growth in a variety of housing types. Whereas, the Grand County Council, County Council adopted the Grand County General Plan Update General Plan on February 7, 2012 with Resolution 2976. Whereas, the County Council adopted the Grand County Land Use Code on January 4, 1999 with Order 299 adopted significant amendments to it on February 19, 2008 with Order 468 and has since amended it with additional ordinances for the purpose of regulating land use, subdivision, and development in Grand County in accordance with general plan. Whereas from time to time, the county adopts ordinances to modify its land use code and zoning map to improve the quality and order of land development and align the land use code with changing community conditions and state laws and temporary planning concepts. Whereas, while the general plan acknowledges the important contribution of tourism to the local economy, it also states the growth of new business sectors to be balanced with tourism to achieve year-round economic diversification with higher paying jobs. Whereas, today, Grand County has allowed hotels, motels, campgrounds, RV parks, condominiums, and townhomes used for overnight accommodations, and bed and breakfast collectively overnight accommodations in certain state zones, districts within the county, as specified in Section 3.1b and Section 4.6 of the Land Use Code. Whereas, the rapid, ongoing, and future growth of overnight accommodations contributes to increased tourism and visitation in the region, recreational assets that help to attract visitors have become crowded and heavily utilized. Between 2010 and 2018, visitation to Arches National Park and Canyonlands National Park decreased 60.1% and 58.9% respectively, with Arches National Park and Canyonlands National Park reporting $1,663,557 and $739,449 recreational visits respectively, for a total of $2,403,006 recreational visits in 2008. Whereas in recent years, Grand County has received 48 permit applications for new construction of overnight accommodation development and 5 permit applications for new construction of other commercial uses, amounting to a ratio of 9.6:1. Whereas a nexus analysis study by Bay Urban Economics verified and quantified the nexus between new lodging related development and increased demand for below market rate housing. Whereas market conditions and an increasing dependence on tourism have resulted in overnight accommodations being itself and the detriment of the development of other necessary uses, including retail, commercial, office, and housing uses. Whereas Grand County currently has 40% more overnight accommodation units, 4,525, than it does primary residential units, 3,240. Whereas vested overnight accommodation development projects have completely built out will produce at least an additional 1,600 overnight accommodation units, resulting in a 38% increase for a total number of overnight accommodation units of 6,245 units, which is nearly double the number of primary residential units. Whereas the median sales price for all housing unit types in Grand County increased 15,051% between 2013 and 2018, at least in part because of demand for residential units used as overnight accommodations, whereas average wages only increased $3,204 per year, 11% over the same time period. Whereas the United States Geological Survey is finalizing a draft report of a recent multi-year groundwater study of the Mohawk Area watershed, this draft report finds that A, base yield for the area is less than previously estimated, 11,000 to 13,000 acre feet per year, rather than 18,000 to 22,000 acre feet per year. And B, in 2017, water users in Grand County diverted 14,504 acre feet. The amount and location of return flows in the Mill Creek, Pack Creek, and the Colorado River must be studied more. And C, data is lacking on actual diversion volumes for private springs, private wells, and Pack Creek surface diversions. Given these findings, Grand County acknowledges that additional water study is necessary and anticipates the need for multi-agency intergovernmental groundwater management plans. Whereas Grand County budgeted for law enforcement, search and rescue, and emergency medical services increased 46% between 2015 and 2019, 15% between 2014 and 2018, and 130% between 2014 and 2018, respectively. As a result, at least in part, have increased tourism impact. Whereas non-residents have accounted for an average of 43% of calls to the Emergency Medical Service Agency since 2012, and non-residents account for a disproportionate share of financial losses to the EMS agency due to the unremitted bills. In 2017, calls to non-resident patients resulted in $317,000, $118 of loss, not including employee wages, benefits, and liability insurance. Whereas, the local office of the Department of Workforce Services has reported a significant increase in the number of private sector service jobs remaining unfilled because of the increase in overnight accommodations and tourism without a proportional increase in affordable housing in Grand County. In February 2019, 328 jobs, 5.6% of total employment, remain unfilled, with more than 100 job advertisements remaining unfilled for at least 6 months or longer. Whereas, overnight accommodation development significantly increases the service population in Grand County due to the number of people utilizing infrastructure and public services. Whereas, significant increase in service population creates undue stress on Grand County's infrastructure and public service system. Whereas, the City of Mohawk recently constructed a roughly $10 million regional wastewater treatment facility in order to handle the increased loading and effluent mix resulting from increased overnight accommodation service population and tank toilets and campgrounds. Whereas, a recent transportation study found that during a typical Friday in the month of May, roughly 2,300 vehicles passed through downtown Mohawk during the peak hour, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., or 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., and projections over the for the year 2030 suggest that that number will increase to 2,750 vehicles per peak hour. The current and projected traffic volumes have resulted in lower levels of service, longer travel times through the San Jose Valley, safety concerns for different user groups, and diminished experience of downtown Mohawk for pedestrians and drivers. Whereas, Grand County has received an increase in the number of complaints regarding the impact of overnight accommodation development on the county's infrastructure, public services, housing market, economy, general quality of life, and environment, including but not limited to two separate citizen petitions roughly 100 to 600 signatures respectively. When response to these issues and impacts, the Grand County Council adopted a temporary land use restriction prohibiting the review and approval of new overnight accommodations on February 6, 2019, for the ordinance 587. Whereas, following the passage of Ordinance 586, the county conducted additional research and hosted numerous public meetings, open houses, and public hearings to understand the issues and impacts related to overnight accommodations, as well as market trends and implications of current zoning standards, community impact, infrastructure, and public service impact, and resident support for the new approvals of overnight accommodations. Whereas, the Grand County Planning Commission, which is statutorial and is responsible for making recommendations to the County Council regarding text and map amendments to the land use code and accompanying zoning map, held a public hearing on June 11, 2019 to solicit public comment on draft changes to the reduced overnight accommodations use rights in Use Table 3.1, Section 4.6 Overnight Accommodations Overlay Standards and Associated Overnight Accommodations Overlay District Map, and recommended approval to the County Council. Whereas, during this planning process, the County Council considers these factors along with their own experience and knowledge regarding the essence and character of the greater Moana community, concentration of overnight accommodations over other commercial businesses in the county, road conditions, and traffic circulation problems, which have become increasingly congested in recent years due to historically high short-term visitation, the lack of public or alternative transportation, utilities, and infrastructure capacity, which is not adequately expanded with the growth in overnight accommodations, excessive noise and air pollution, which may not be shared with local regulations, and housing prices, which have escalated in comparison to wages. Whereas, for the reasons cited above, the Grand County Council finds removing all overnight accommodation uses types in this list of principal uses in all base zoning districts, establishing use-specific overnight accommodation overlays, and immediately applying the appropriate use-specific overnight accommodation overlays to existing invested projects is necessary to achieve the purpose of Title 17, Chapter 27A of the Utah Code. And whereas the Grand County Council held a public hearing on July 2nd, 2019, to solicit public comment on this ordinance and a voted that was all there. Any further discussion? We need to restate the motion. We don't know what we're going to do. That's the ordinance. Should I read it again?
No.
Cool. All those in favor? All those opposed?
Tie vote.
Those in opposition are Greg Halliday, Chris Wells, and Roy Patton. Adopting proposed ordinance establishing the policies and procedures governing professional ethics and conflict of interest during county officers and employees, and repealing and replacing ordinance 416. Next up, that's the item. Have a coverage in my agenda. That's one. Next up, item two, approving proposed response letters addressed in all the comments. Table two. I would take a comment.
I make a motion to postpone
Second by Curtis Wells, any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, is that unanimous? Okay. Election clerk service passes here. Now we're at item R, adopting the further ordinance establishing policy and procedures governing special elections and not just
Okay.
Motion made by Curtis Wells, seconded by Terry Morris. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. With Mary temporarily stepped out of the room. That brings us to our consent agenda. Was there something that was worth pulling off? All right. Thank you. Somebody wants to include in the motion to approve the consent agenda of adding the name in front of
Evan. Yeah. So I'll move forward to that. I don't know. I just wanted to know that what you write on this the group salary spread.
From what Judge Pub is asking. So the salary range is $29,829 to $53,691, and we'll have it changed to say may include benefits.
It sounds like we can do it all in one big swoop.
On the $21,500 unbudgeted contract between Bain County Executive Disease Control International LLC for aerial mosquito control services. I have a year and find the emergency purchase order with the DASCO of a Guardian 190-D4 ULD spotter for the unbudgeted amount of $8,500 for purchases of community health, safety, and welfare. Ratifying the chair's signature on the grant application for the reconstruction of the commercial terminal at Abraham Lincoln Airfield Airport. Ratifying the chair's signature on the grant application for the reconstruction of Taxiway A at Abraham Lincoln Airport. Item X, ratifying the chair's signature on the grant application for the fiscal year 2020 emergency management performance grant in the amount of $39,100. Item Y, ratifying council member Halliday's signature on community wildfire preparedness plan for the wildland of the interstate for Grand County Service Area for Castle Valley Fire Protection. Item D, ratifying the salary range being announced by the administrative office in the court for the new justice court system. What is the word name going?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next up, discussion item. It would be great if this CD did that.
All right, for July calendar, July 19th, this Friday, 12 p.m. is the Change in Form of Government Study Committee, and that's at noon, and that is for the next four Fridays here. So July 18th, July 26th, August 2nd, and then August 9th. Also for July 24th is Pioneer Day, so county offices will be closed. Any updates for July?
Saturday.
I forgot about that. 1 p.m.
along with the subject.
For August, August 22nd is Canyon Country Partnership, and that is at Hideout Community Center in Monticello. Any updates for August? Employment opportunities. Grand County Sheriff's Office is hiring for administrative assistants, corrections officer, patrol deputy, communications dispatch, and food services assistant manager. Order District volunteer vacancies, Budget Advisory Board, Historical Preservation Commission, Housing Authority, Noxious Weed Control Board, Archer Special Service District, Canyonlands Healthcare, Thompson Springs Special Service Fire District, and Transportation Special Service District. Special events, none that are permitted through the county for the rest of July, and for August, August 28th through September 12th, Moab Music Festival. That is all.
Thank you, Mark. The discussion on next steps of the possible local agreement and loan for reimbursement is important among the CEO of the district.
So, yeah, there's not really we're not to the point that we have like a grant and local. It's something we need to bring up for discussion because we're going to be incurred some expenses for emergency purposes for public health, safety, and welfare that we would hope to be reimbursed from the Mosquito District for. And so, you know, really right now the focus is the Mosquito issue. But this is an opportunity to, you know, kind of discuss the financial arrangements currently and, you know, how we move forward. And I know Chris has some things that he wanted to happen to this regard also. So.
Yes, I think if possible, the idea that we could get an arrangement with Tito Bingham and then Kurt and I were at the Mosquito Bay meeting last night, and we also discussed invited me incorporating building up a reserve for the next time so that we're you know, they would be prepared for this and have the money set aside to deal with another high water year. So that's something we brought up at the board meeting too. I hadn't seen any disagreement with either of those concepts. And so we probably start working on some kind of interlocal agreement for a loan to sort of pay back of the aerial treatment and the fogger. And so that will hopefully be something that they agree to. And I think that they can incorporate it in the contract and agree to. And then probably everybody can agree that they should have that money on reserve that they can. But in association with that, probably, I think that the board needs to come up with a high water year plan so that they know exactly what they're going to do the next time they do the snowpack level, how they do their plan. We obviously knew the river was going to be high, and so if they had a plan and they had a budget for it, you know, I think it would have been a much, much smoother year. The other thing that I think that we discussed, which is fairly apparent now, is that during a high water year, it really takes more than just a typical mosquito abatement employee. And so it's not just a matter of money, it's a matter of also establishing an interlocal agreement with Grand County and hopefully the city of Moab to lend some support that's going to be needed in another high water year. Because even if they have the money, they still want to have the staff that would be required. And it was quite a big job for us as a county to coordinate
cleaning and the aerial treatment, and that required quite a few people on our behalf. So just looking into the future, I hope to work with them, you know, on establishing a plan that way too, so we'll be ready for the next one. You know, hopefully we'll have time to build up the repairs over time. You know, it's not really guaranteed that we won't have, you know, another high wire near the right away, but it's not typically likely. I think we probably have some time to build it into their budget to be incremental. Yeah. Okay, that's what we talked about. Nothing's been drafted or anything like that. But those invoices they haven't come to my office yet, but they're coming, I'm sure, soon. And so, ideally, I'd like to set them up to be paid out of the district funds, because we have an agreement to do their bookkeeping for them, and then transfer money from the county to cover those expenses. But if we do it that way, then it's easier to set up the loan liability. And so, that's probably what I'm going to try to do. And maybe draft an interlocal agreement as soon as possible to make that all on the book, so to speak. But I knew that would be something that we can get reimbursed for over time.
You know, one of the things that really kind of shaped up today was because they're understaffed right now, and the aerial treatment was something that probably we were behind by at least a month. And the fogger itself is severely inflated and disrupted. And so what, aside from just financial support that we've provided for a new fogger, bringing over a loaner and truck from the road department so that they've got a more reliable vehicle, and now they've got, you know, either two foggers running or backup foggers, is really just that the two field employees in the CO district are in the field from 6 a.m. to, as of recently, 2 p.m. They go home, get a little bit of rest, and then the fogging shifts from 8 to the midnight. And so, you know, since we started fogging every night, and we need to continue to fog every night until we get things better under control, the biggest support now is just human resources for them. And, you know, we looked into everything, including like a volunteer group, but being able to provide opportunities for like the noxious weed department guys to come in and pick up a fogging shift, you know, and compensate them for their time, and also potentially road department. So, you know, the last thing that I can see, you know, that I work on today with Chris and Ruth is being able to support their overtime budget, the CO Bayman district and the noxious weed department. And, you know, if we end up having to road department employees or an employee pick up some shifts that, you know, we would have reimbursed the bill, you know, for his expense out of his overtime budget. And I think the estimate from Ruth today from non-speed was only $6,000, is that right, Ruth?
That's what we paid on the way from 30 weeks.
Okay. So we're not talking about, you know, a really big expense in terms of the relief that we can provide in the field base district staff now, but the benefit and the value added to the quality of service that the public will get from here on out by having a couple of extra county guys more stationed on the night shift, you know, will be really helpful. And I want to say that I think that the mosquito abatement district, this was a big learning lesson, especially for some staff, and I think that I really look forward to collaborative discussions once the job settles, the fog settles on the season, you know, to make sure that we don't get caught in that situation again. And I think everybody understands that, you know. I think it's been great. I mean, obviously, when the nuisance mosquitoes, you know, were really in a high, you know, I think obviously, you know, to quote Chase's on the board, if your water's running, you don't think to pat the public works on the back, but when your water shuts off and everyone wants to know what the hell's going on. And I think the mosquito district kind of experienced that. And so it's very constructive and solution oriented at this point. And so, like Chris has said, the tricky thing is that these
high water years, you know, obviously aren't every year, and so having these plans in place and really counts in place so that we're not scrambling in July while we're down in mosquitoes is important. So I really appreciate this. A lot of county departments, council members, elected official staff have really been great. You know, the airport was really awesome, the road department's been really good. And I think the mosquito abatement district has been really great in accepting help and you know, accepting people to come in and pull on the rope with them. And so, but, you know, getting square with the county and making sure that the service is adequate moving forward and they have those plans in place is really important. Chris is, I don't know how much back padding went on before I got the name, but Chris has really put a lot of time into this and time they didn't have. And naturally, he's in the middle of a lot of these transactions, so he doesn't have much of a choice if he wants it done right. But he's done a really good job, so I think, you know, getting some clarity and something structured moving forward on the, you know, the financial arrangements.
That's and just as maybe an update to anybody who's interested, the Fairfield City, the way this happened to our council works has been a great reaction, so it's probably going to be about a week after the drop before we really start seeing any results. Because not only is the next mosquito in the mud stage, but there are already a lot of them that are in the people stage, and those ones are going to still have been flying in the air. And so we really want to know the effects of that treatment for a little while. You know, I'm hopeful that that will have a dramatic impact on mosquito numbers, especially in those neighborhoods around the wetlands. So we'll kind of play it by ear. But the plan right now is to continue fogging the fogging round every single night until further notice. And we still keep getting a lot of questions about, are you fogging tonight? Are you fogging tonight? And I have to say, it's a standing order, we're fogging every night. Just so you know, until further notice. So that's the plan. And we've only had really two test results so far with West Nile virus, which trended up slightly. And so waiting on the third test result to see how things are trending just from the fogging. And then in another week, we'll start to see the effects of the aerial treatment. So we'll try to keep everybody informed on mosquito counts and the, you know, the infection rate that's present in the test for West Nile virus. And so the out changes will update the map, the schedule changes will update that also and get it out to the public.
Yeah. People for county residents that are not part of the mosquito abatement district, we just want y'all to know that we're definitely concerned and we want to do what we can to help y'all. And I like the idea of having the mosquito abatement district repay the county for the extension. And also get them to plan ahead so they're not caught flat-footed in there.
My comments are similar. I've been heard said it a good way, but this was a good learning experience and props to everyone who acted quickly, and I know the county got a lot of attention for their action. I think most are good. Chris went opined differently. I think mostly is that, you know, people appreciated the county's quick action to help the mosquito abatement district. But they are a special service district, and it also seems to us that they are not following law, and Terry, I think that you are the liaison, and I think it's important we get that district training, and that's something, you know, we can facilitate as we open meetings.
I think most of the people have done that. They have been, but whoever is on the Facebook and other website, you have to actually search from mosquito abatement, more than mosquito abatement, so they can find them. Because if you go through the drop down menu, they just don't show up. But if you search for them, then they show up. They did miss posting that meeting for the city that they had. Although, you know, it was, I think, yeah, anyway, they missed that one. But other than that, they hit their noticing. And
So they haven't been doing that.
Right. And
that's on public meeting notice, you can find out PMA.gov, which is where we are required by state law. We are not required to put anything on our town budget, but we do.
Well, the other comment is, and I don't know that it's even appropriate, but it's a special service district that needs to get their funding under control and plan for the future, but there was also a lot of criticism that the city was silent, and, you know, Mills County is stepping up.
The board decisions with the appointment of positions. Another area, and this is fairly recent because of the law change recently, if they do want to propose a target tax increase, their first option, their easiest option is to come to the council and request basically get that council commission to go increase in taxation. If we do give that commission, then we'll hold a treason taxation hearing and then vote to approve the tax increase. If we don't give them the consent, then they can still do it, but they, I believe they have to have a vote among their district citizens, which is pretty onerous. From both perspectives, the county has some influence over them, but state law does require that all these districts operate independently, and Grant County is precluded from directing the operations or any expenditure of any district. It just simply can't do it. And so, that's something that needs to be a misnomer among the community. And so I think that from that perspective, we do have limited influence, but as far as mutual cooperation goes, we can sign any agreement that they're willing to sign for any kind of cooperative management of the district. They have to be mutual and they have to agree with me.
My point was going to be that if the special service district, we're deciding to do that, we authorize the special service district to respond. But this is the type of place I'd like to see the city and the county cooperate to get that benefit of the residents. And this is exactly on site, just like the city has any business, and it's not because the county hasn't asked, like to see more of that type of cooperation.
Well, I did before I did anything, really, or authorize any emergency expenses, I did call the team manager and ask for help. And never got back with me about it. So, all I'm saying is that it's a public health emergency. I've speculated, we've all, talking with Lily, we speculated that West Nile virus was highly likely to be present this year. But the huge load of mosquitoes and the pretty sizable pack of vector mosquitoes. And so I can't wait for the city. I just had to move on.
I just realized it perfectly. My point is,
since
we're out here,
I think the point moving forward, I think there's an opportunity to think about the future of that service to the community, and I think there's a really good opportunity to reach out to council members and engage with them in that regard, because I'm a city resident. I live down by the Slough, 702. I'll speak for myself. I'm not going to get mad at state who's paying for what. We're paying for it all, regardless. The citizens are. We just want the service to be of good quality. And in an emergency situation like that, one would hope that we could come to the table quick. But there's definitely a kind of sense, not just from the city, but from a lot of people that understand the difference between district and county is a real issue, and it's a real issue for most people, I think, and understand. So, I think when you're reevaluating any district or any department, that's a good opportunity to discuss that. I think a lot of the CRT discussion and a lot of county budget discussion,
past couple of years that they feel like they should be paying for more, and I think a lot of the response has been that the city's been kind of guarded and trying to avoid the county balancing our budget on their dime. And I think, you know, the way to look at it is just let's make sure everyone's paying their fair share. And this is a good example, you know, of that. And, you know, the other thing I want to say is that I think it was very, like, I want to, you know, for the record, initially when the district was clearly having some problems with mosquitoes, there was a lot of messaging going on. This is what happens when you don't approve tax increase. This is, you know, in a way that made me feel like the citizens were having a finger pointed at them that this is their fault. And I thought that that was very poor and that that was actually not true. You know, and Chris has touched on that and that, you know, this combination of things, you know, more revenue could definitely be used in some aspects to get them up to a bar where they need them to be in a year like this. You know, that reserve account is real. But there's also operational issues that, you know, that can and will be improved. And accountability for those is important, you know. And so it's a combination of things. And you know, as far as the city goes, when we have our discussions about, you know, what's the future of the service in the county, I think the city, I don't see a reason why they won't be at the table. So, and I've already reached out to 3 city council members and said, hey, when you guys get some time later on in the summer, I'd like to talk to you about this mosquito issue. And, you know, I think they're open to that. So.
One difference this 2018, yes, this is an independent entity, but if it came to just the dissolution of the district, that would not be the city's option at all. That would totally be the time, because the time to be created that district by the members. So that's just one difference.
Or it's actually been several iterations of the creation. I think the most recent one was actually and I'll do the answer to that. But the last high water year that we had that was as high as this was, I think, around 93. And looking at, you know, just at the documents that I have, it was a really contentious and sort of dramatic response then, too. And so the lesson wasn't obviously learned in 93, and so hopefully we'll all learn it now, you know, in 2019. So I think moving forward, we'll be able to get this plan together and to establish a budget for the next time we have water like this.
Any further discussion?
Just because we are going to do things that we're going to look over anyway.
In terms of the repayment or in terms of the staffing or?
I guess
for now, I mean, the most important thing is just the repayment. So I'd work with Christy on that and we'll put it up. It's probably a fairly standard thing, you know. So I don't think it'll be too hard to come up with. I can reach out maybe to the clerk association and ask if anybody has something that resembles a loan interlocal agreement between government entities. But and then once we're really able to do an interlocal agreement about sharing staffing or anything like that until the district comes up with a high water plan, and there's no such change yet.
One more thing, I guess, is there's also an issue of kind of some cooperating opportunities with other agencies like the Department of Natural Resources and the Nature Conservancy about some of the concerns in the blue where there's like an endangered fish pond and an issue, and the district is, you know, communicated that, you know, they think there's some opportunity to better mitigate the mosquito issue without compromising, you know, any of the objectives that those agencies have in the solution. So I was thinking, you know, another thing that we can do once we've settled this is maybe send a letter up there and try to get somebody from the DNR down here and from the Nature Conservancy and see if we can set trying to compromise on what the district's trying to accomplish, you know, in that regard, so.
Yeah, I think what would be a good idea is that ideally you probably do, in a year like this, two aerial treatments. So we're looking at like $150,000, and that's way more than you have, you know, the statutory fund reserve. Because they're only about half 20% of their operational budget on reserve. So, and so the alternative is logging what is toxic fish. The larger side isn't. The larger side is fish with fish. But they just spent, I don't know, $300,000 on that nursery. And so I'm sure that they don't want to have, you know, that impacted with fog. But we're in a situation now where we don't really have much option. And so, again, going into the future, maybe we can come up with money for two aerial larvicide treatments and, you know, eliminate the fogging or create a reduce.
Colorado River spreads in this day and age with these viruses is serious business.
Any further discussion?
No, well, I just wanted to say thanks to Chris and you guys for working so hard. My district was filling the clip on Mountain View, and they were excited that we were doing something about it. So, I got a lot of phone calls. You might tell you to go out on the fogging truck.
Yeah.
I will. I mean, I might as well. Still right from that to the night show to that. I might as well. I'm going to put a fog down below the boat.
There you go. You're going to do that.
Size of life, is there a little laser from the fog? I'll fog too. Next up is item BB, discussion on transition options for the expected vacancy of the council administrator position in early 2020.
Well, so you guys, this is not news, but what is news is that we're finding some legal review, which I'm sure County Senator will validate. The new form of governance would not go into effect until January 1st of 2023, because it requires a general November election on an even number of years for county to be elected entities every 2022 to be elected entities on the government that will finally get voted one way or the other next year. So what I'm saying is, when I first announced my retirement, I thought it was going to be a little over a year. No, it's going to be closer to 3 years of a gap without leadership in this office. So I feel like it's really important that we get on something now. So I have two options to discuss this topic. And it'll come up, you know, soon because there are budget opening and those dues will require some budget still. So I don't know if you can tell in the top left-hand corner of these little spreadsheets, but there's an administrator in training office, much like how we had Chris there, there's a budget officer in training, and then you've got like it with Florida. And then that's one option. I think that might be the easiest. The only budgeting would be a little bit for this year. We want to get somebody hired while I'm still around. So if you budgeted some thing for that position, then we could get some easily. There's no new job descriptions in CA and grades, figure out all that. The other option would be to go with what the needs assessment recommended. And maybe there's a combination there too, I don't know, but which would be to pass a, in the needs assessment, a test in your packet, either a deputy administrator or I think a better word is an assistant administrator, basically a mini, or as for a max mini, someone actually with more visionary and strategic planning focus. For the ultimate administrative position, so my job description would need to be really more centered on that than how it is now. And then the assistant administrator would be more day to day, but they would share, you know, each have half of their load of the department head and top office staff. So no one should have as many direct reports that I've carried for 7 years now. I'm down one actually, so it's a little easier without me there. But so it'd be more like seven six department heads and a comp office staff per assistant administrator and current administrator. So the other idea would be to get moving on that needs assessment idea. That is also a valid one, but that is, we know that we have other needs assessment requests that came through for this year, that they're going to play by 2020. So that would be 2019. Mine was not the only one, so it would need to be too long, probably. Unless you guys said, no, this is not important, and you do need to get on this sooner. So those are some things that I came up with. But either way, I think we need to look at that assistant administrator for the 2020 budget, if not 2019. So I wanted to get some feedback from you so I can know how to move forward. I did talk with the leadership team about this the other day. Just so that I can explain the whole understanding of the laws, and we can't go dead man, so I have to quote on that. He says it does appear pretty clear that the election of town officials has to be conducted in a general election year, that is in November of the number year. Do you want to add to that? That's why I'm talking about a 3-year gap.
Yeah, so our general election on November of the beginning year, so we're 2020 to approve optional plan, and we're 2022 to actually elect the new
I mentioned this to Ruth, but I remember when the Congress of the Papers resigned, there was a gap in the code for how to handle a special election. And that came to mind, and I would assume that the committee and everyone would want this to be handled as timely as possible, but certainly not rushing anything. And that gap quite a bit longer than I think a lot of citizens would prefer, regardless of the form. So one thing that came to mind is I think your committee would be wise to engage with Lieutenant Governor Cox at overseeing elections and say, oh, this is a concern that we have. Is there any flexibility or can you work with us at all to, find a more efficient way to have this transition in form of government? They're obviously well aware of these issues, and it's not a precedent for them to apply some pragmatism to making sure that the elections are handled, in a way where it makes sense. So, just a thought.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, the election code and HCC4, the protections are a little touchy for them, so they weren't integrated well.
But in this case, they do agree on this point.
Yeah, but I mean, even without changing confusion code, if there's an interest in not delaying it until 2020, I would reach out to them.
Yeah, there is still ambiguity, and actually Washington County is moving in this election. So they are allowing themselves, based on their reading code, to proceed with the special election. Because they don't have any controversy, no one actually cares about it up there. No one's even participating, which has open house when no one shows up. We have a very different situation here, so we've been reading the code in a much conservative way to make sure we don't get the county in trouble to do it. So, I just want to be also with hiring your own council, remember?
I know this is off the subject, but I don't know. I'm coming from a place where delaying that transition that long is a negative forever. People feel like there's value there, but I don't think that's necessary or appropriate to make that decision without reaching out to the state elections office, because it is a unique circumstance. And there's some ambiguity. And if there's another county moving forward in a more timely manner, then that makes the point even more.
Well, we're talking about, let me just be clear, we're talking about two separate elections. And so there is ambiguity between HCC 64 and the election code about, the ambiguity exists in when you can run the optional plan, not when the election of the officer is here. So there just simply is no ambiguity that I can find. Both HC224 and the election code both say very clearly that the election of officers will happen at a general election, a regular general election. And so, there really what Gavin did, say in his opinion that maybe we want to lobby in the upcoming session for some legislative change that allows us to run elections sooner.
it's sort of a new tenant type thing. I don't know if the timing of when that would go into effect would help us or not, but he did call that out as an option. He even said that we can just do it and ask for forgiveness afterwards. It was wrong, I don't know. To me, it really kind of tends to be a perspective, I guess. There's a lot of people that don't even want the government to change, and so I don't know that there would be a threat that it lasts another, you know, couple of years longer. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of complications in my world and in Drew's world and in our world kind of dealing with it. But how much do the citizens in majority care about when the transition happens? I don't know. That's totally a further speculation. But to me, there is no ambiguity in the code right now about when the election will officer have. And if it did become that, you know, we would do like a mid-term vacancy, so there was some complications because we have to get back on the regular general election schedule, which would mean that somebody would have to get elected for 1 year. And then the other council members can't get elected for 3 years, which is kind of weird. But that's how it would have to be to get back on track with the regular general election cycle. Because normally it's very quick term, you have somebody would be on for 2 years, and the others would be on for 4, and then you establish the standard, and then you have to get back on track with the regular general election cycle.
Oh,
that's
one point. Is it actually works pretty well? It's still a bit.
So what about
I think we've kind of gone off of what we were discussing. No matter what happens with the election and what happens with, you know, when, well, the new form of government comes in, we have a person who is leaving her office in March. And I think we need to have a plan and we can work all that other stuff out. I would like to, you know, it seems to me if I read it right from the review group, you were saying that you're thinking of two ways to go about doing the transition. What maybe a committee or a group could do would come up with pros and cons of both ideas, or maybe even a third idea, and then bring it to us to discuss and come up with how we're going to move forward in March. It's going to be there before we break.
But right now, what do you see as the pros of having the administrator in training?
I think it's just simpler, it makes sense. It's not creating a whole new position, which even though you need it, you don't have to have it right now. What I need is someone to train right now.
Yeah.
That can then take it to the next level with the system or whatever. In fact, that would be an ideal way to have that new administrator.
Create
your
system.
Yeah, and, you know, actually would be hiring that position, where some folks would be hiring the administrator in training to be the administrator, if it works out. Yeah.
So, I mean, you may remember that I kind of brought up the idea of also budgeting, you know, for next year to do an organizational assessment and try to figure out how we can make a more efficient organization. And certainly I think that an assistant administrator fits into that scenario, but we don't know exactly how we'll have to make that assessment. And so that's one of my presentations about moving quickly on the establishing this. We don't know how it's really going to fit into a new hybrid based organizational chart. So I would prefer to go through that process first. The second issue I have is that once we get this position on, either as a training or as a new position, prior to us finishing the budget, but I'm really apprehensive about creating a new position without seeing the bottom line of our budget. Because when we get to the point of trying to figure out how much money we have and our resources, it's not really until the end of the budgeting process that you really know what you can and can't do in terms of creating new positions. And so, because Bruce wants to bring this person on, give them a fair amount of training time prior to getting to the point of really knowing what our bottom line is for next year, I feel like it's important to sort of hold off on creating a new position. And we always have that option down the road, and it's probably an inevitable. It doesn't matter when someone reported it happening. Work it into the overall theme of a new and improved organizational chart.
You also like the administrator in charge.
Well, that's also the
budget
impact, right?
Can
you talk to
right.
Our members?
Yeah, so, I mean, we will have to, I've been so busy I haven't even been able to approach in a mid-year budget, and it doesn't require that. And there's other reasons why we have to do that anyway. But obviously, budgeting for 2 or 3 months for this position is a lot easier, knowing that when Ruth finally retires, that we're not going to have that doubled up salary. It's sort of a temporary period of time. And so it's easier to say that there's one time expense, we know it's going to be in the last period of time. We're going to prove that, and it's not going to affect the bottom line forever. And that's the issue with staying in the position. Unless you go through the tough task of getting workforce reduction, you know that those new positions are going to be costs that pile on every single year. With this training scenario, that's not the case. So temporary, one time, whatever the period of time we establish, that's it, and we'll take where it wants and then move forward.
That sounds like it doesn't for this step one, I think it's supposed to like right at 85 now, so it's a lot more effective than of course when I took it years ago. So that could help, but I know that recruiting outstanding outcome is going to be difficult with any of the GIS questions. I mean, there are people who definitely are looking for work like this. They're excited for it, that's what they want. And they typically expect at least 3 years because they're typically contract jobs. And one of them, the kind of complicated when I came on board, this is why I came on board, because we've been going every 2 to 3 years with an administrator change. It was horrible. And so they wanted to try something different. So this trying something different, have a regular employment status, maybe it's all kind of depends on the person. We have that contract that lasts 5 years, I think, in 10. Anyway,
I remember a couple of years ago, I asked for all the different job descriptions from the handbook from the office, that documentation would be good for the committee to go through too and understand.
This board is where we're going to do it.
Maybe just this board, how the position evolved, why it evolved, and did that benefit, the council and the county? I think that would be something that would be, worthwhile,
Well, they're saying the nomenclature that really just reflected more accurately maybe how things actually work, which is that, whatever the administrator is, they only really have the oversight over those departments that are under the council. And so Ruth's not the boss of the sheriff or me or any other elected official. But sometimes the administrator sort of thought they were. And the job description sounded that way too.
Well, I'm not
ready. So I'm just saying, that's why hanging from county administrator and county council administrator to delineating the
hired manager would think they would be in charge of elected officials, which is bizarre.
There was some, there are some misunderstanding, I think, in those days also, that we were called a council, and so. I think somebody was looking at the Council of Foreign Government statutes in the state law and assuming those statutes applied to this form of government, but they didn't. Really, they don't have modified, which got rooted into a weird section of the state code. And so there was misunderstandings about that also. There's just a lot of misunderstandings. So that's the history of it.
It is.
Well, I think it's in the stuff. I mean, it's your first job ahead of us.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't really see us making big sweeping changes right now, you know, before March of like eliminating an administrator. So I think that we should go ahead and advertise.
And you don't want to eliminate
a
We don't need a straw
poll. But yeah, I think the entering and out seems to make more sense.
As you said, with my both my staffers and my council office, many times they don't want to have supervision responsibilities, they're like for part time employees. I just want to say that I brought up.
Yeah, we just added prison title.
I think I would be looking for someone not full on 40-hour, 50-hour work week. I don't. I mean, somebody who has any responsibilities. But I think that our budget is more provided for this time. And that's okay. I don't know.
Find somebody with that kind of qualifications and transfer looking for it locally is not possible, but I'll just remind you of the magic office of salary so that we can be competitive to be raised to a top level for the CA CEO kind of position, even though it's not really the same as it is in a city or a business where the CEO is in charge of everything.
So would the next step be to wait until the mid-year budget amendment to amend the 2019 budget?
I would propose that you come up with the temporary position. You know, I think that we might want to draft it, but I think we want to hire somebody to replace Bruce. So we'll be looking for somebody with the qualifications we're looking for county council administration. And it's always a good time also to review the job description because it's one thing the job description is in play. And you can't make a very good time to do it. And ultimately, in the long run, as we've indicated, this position should be more like predicting your stuff, strategy, getting the council to be trying to make it happen and say, this person's going to be taking that decision, this person's going to be doing day to day work, they're going to be logging on with all kinds of real detail kinds of things.
Those are the things I was talking about.
But, you can't dig all that stuff in until you get in a decision. But looking forward, some kind of direction.
What came up in the calendar item, so there's going to be a meeting for Saturday, and there was also a mail that went out from UAC, and that one that had like a talking point to put in a piece sounds like some couple areas specific tax policy that goes from the report as part of your comments to the city.
I think we're all kind of on the same page of like why the form of flexibility is needed. But in terms of like depth is crucial to the flexibility. I want to have to be aware of that. So each other as
well. Well, I'll go first. My feeling is that comments that I had with Carl after the showing legislated the PRD to be unrestricted PRD or close to it for two reasons. I think that puts the PRD on equal footing with other forms of revenue, and it's a clear, and it puts the responsibility of the center money widely in the hands of the council or the commission wherever you're at. Opinions of what to do with the money and have, you know, which is, you know, those are discussions that we have in the future of what we do with those. So I think that's where I'm coming from. And it's something that's been tracking with the legislature because it sells itself and makes sense. And I think it's going to continue to do that. That's my pitch. I don't know if everyone else is in line with that.
We have certain industries that we don't Hello. I don't have
high-density housing overlay sunset clause, and there's a market response.
Class that I had to take for my contractor's license, we had the opportunity to go down to Las Vegas, right in the middle of the desert, lots of water out there that they're doing. I can't think of the hotel's name, but it's the one that they have the big ship in and they sink the ship.
Treasure Island.
Yes.
Oh, how
was you? Okay. So we got to go down in their basement and they have a water filtration system that used to be bigger than this room. And they have developed it down to no bigger than that table. And their gray water from the motel went to that filtration system and put all the water out there for that ship. And so maybe that's something that we can look at in the near future for motels or big water use items. I was very impressed with it. And they have developed it themselves. So there are other solutions out there for the water thing. They have. Yes. And if they can make it work there, I know it's probably a high dollar system, but our motels are getting high dollar here. And so, you know, probably no more than that. So that's something to look into.
So when we put our motel in, we looked at that, that fertilizing the lawns and everything out there. And there was something in the state code that would not let you use gray water.
Really?
You have to go to the state and figure out what that is.
Yeah. It's something to think about and something maybe to petition the state about for water use, maybe not in the big city, but maybe something in rural areas. That's just a thought. And then I'll throw this out. I have a well, and it is for sale. It's a 10-inch well. My dad drilled it a long time ago. And I don't know if it works, whatever, but he put an 8-inch pipe down it, and he pumped it for 2 days straight and never brought the water down. So there's a lot of water in this well. It's in San Juan County, but it's a diversion point. And if you have, you know, you get the water right, that's something that you can look at too for future use. Okay, sorry. I appreciate you letting me comment. So thank you. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah. I'm not in any hurry to see if they have any, stuff. But I will say that there's a lot of market response to high-density housing already. And there's a lot of expectation of development for the high-density housing overlay. And there's a lot of, there's good reasoning to raise the Sunset Club, and at what point that representation is reasoning to not raise it right now, or until some point, but I wanted to try to capture some consensus on where we're at in doing that, And so that was the purpose of this tonight. Zach Rad sent out an email with some information on units in the pipeline, and there's a lot of discussion in the community about how many units high-density housing overlay is responsible for in the pipeline, and does that include the Oregon Bronson development, and just questions like that, and I wanted to have an answer for the public. The county council has found that we have a payer for affordable housing. The state council has also. If we're going to not raise the sunset clause on this policy that is generated a lot of interest, I think we need to be very clear why and be cautious doing so. That's what I have to say on that. If you guys want to bring up that, when Terry decides to stick around, Jalen's asked some vacation, and Terry's the only one ready for it, and I'll be ready to have some
questions.
I would
be interested to see the proposal of
because I think no matter where we set it, I don't think we're ready to play off the board. But we increase it at any time, so there's going to be more applications coming in before those have been processed. So I think if we make any changes, it also has to include what to do with the permits as they're coming in. Because we're already telling them, like,
well, you can submit.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things is the planning and zoning of where we're at and how they can handle, calls that they're getting to feel like they're in a little bit of a stressful area right now, too. And then, being consistent there is important. There's a lot of other reasons for not raising the sunset clause right now, like not oversaturating the market, allowing a lot of these developers here to do these things. You can dump the country in. Yeah. Online within a couple of years, that diverse from these guys, and you're helping us solve the problem. So, what do you think is going to happen after this?
Yeah, I also don't want to rush the enforcement of what the users are doing. If they haven't actually processed one of those, or to know, whoever's living in the house isn't an employee, and workforce, and we need to ensure that it stays that way. And, same sort of thing. We suddenly open the floodgate on all these things, and we say, who are these people that are living here? Like, now we have to vet, hundreds and hundreds of occupancy
things. And the housing authority is in line.
Yeah, well, the housing authority said that they would take care of it, but I don't know if they're ready for it.
Right.
They just got on board, didn't just hire it.
The good news is if you believe in the policy and how it's written and actually, delivering some public utilities, you'd have to say the response has been healthy or better.
Yeah.
So,
we're kind of okay with people coming. The water's
open. You have to care it. You rock and roll. Yeah.
So maybe that was enough discussion that,
I feel like we have some money.
Oh. That's why they do the whole thing.
Back up. You can't understand that one, though.
You got a...